that lane caught fire over Los Gatos Canyon. A fireball of thunder, it shook all the hills.
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In the dark about the policies of John Kerry and feeling bullied by George W. Bush, Brazil is undecided which candidate would be better for relations between Latin America and the U.S. That's according to Maria Alves, a co-founder of the Brazilian Workers' Party and trade union activist. Alves spoke at the University of Wisconsin in Madison on Thursday and expressed how Brazilians feel about the U.S. elections and the future of the free trade area of the Americas. Brazil has refused to give in to U.S. demands on the agreement, believing that they would hurt the country's most important exports. According to Alves, when Bush visited Brazil last year, he went on live television and tried to bully Brazil into accepting the terms.
And so he, in Brazil, went on television and said, well, we're going to do bilateral agreements with every nation of Latin America and leave Brazil out if you don't negotiate with us the way we want. I mean, that's preposterous. The answer of the Brazilian president of the ALCA was, well, go ahead. I want to see you leave 180 million people out of a common market.
The attempt at intimidation left a bad taste in the mouth of many Brazilians. However, when it comes to Kerry, there is a big question mark. Alves says the only sign Kerry has given that he will listen to Latin American concerns is in a recent statement he made on Cuba.
He said that whatever policy he would have for Cuba would be discussed with Latin American leaders. That was very interesting, because that's the first time that an American candidate says that he will take into consideration the opinion of other Latin American leaders.
On Sunday, San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom called on hotel managers to end the lockout of 4,500 union workers at 14 San Francisco hotels. Manuel Castro, member of Unite Here, Local 2.
We're striking because they want to cut our benefits, they want to cut our wages.
In addition to San Francisco, contracts have expired in Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles, and workers want to bring their contract in line with other major hotel markets for simultaneous negotiations 18 months from now. The hotels have decided to play hardball by turning what was originally a two-week strike into an indefinite lockout. The union says it has the financial resources to weather a long battle. The British Broadcasting Service will cut 6,000 jobs, nearly a quarter of its workforce, by the end of the year. The BBC has a royal charter from the British government which allows it to secure license fees from television owners, netting an income of $5.2 billion. The plan involves cutting production staff through privatization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new report by Public Citizen reveals the Bush administration blocked rules to secure chemical and nuclear plants threatening homeland security. Industry representatives have contributed almost $20 million for Republicans since 2000 and include 20 so-called Bush pioneers, individuals who've raised at least $100,000 for the Bush presidential campaign. They've also spent more than $200 million lobbying from 2002 through June 2004.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I had survived two previous rounds of layoffs, and then the third round got me. They wiped out my whole department. I was forced to stop paying credit card payments. I had to file bankruptcy. I had to be rushed to the hospital for an emergency appendectomy, for which I'm not insured. How can we be the only westernized country without national health care? I can't believe that this is the best we can do. There's got to be a better way. I'm voting for John Kerry.
MoveOnPack is responsible for the content of this advertisement. There's a huge, hulking, hairy beast lurking in the corner that the powers that be don't want you to notice. The draft. Oh, no, insists George W., we're not going to have a draft, period. But isn't he the same guy who also insisted that Saddam Hussein absolutely had weapons of mass destruction? Why would anyone take his word? Oh, say the talk show pundits, the fear that a draft is coming is just paranoia being fueled by internet bloggers. But aren't these the same pundits that assured us that our troops would be greeted by grateful Iraqis throwing rose petals at them? And that those troops would be home in no time? Who trusts them? Every day, we see the reality in news reports of a war gone horribly bad, and of so-called leaders who don't have a clue as to what to do except throw more troops at it. Indeed, top military analysts concede that our troops will have to occupy that country for another 10 to 20 years. Meanwhile, Bush is already pushing his next war, this one in Iran. There's also that boiling pot in North Korea, a nation that really does have weapons of mass destruction. Plus, we're still in Afghanistan. There's the genocide in Darfur. We're sinking more troops into the jungle of Colombia. And we're constantly told to expect yet another major hit on America by Al-Qaeda. Where will the Bushites get the troops for all of this? Not by continuing to force current troops in Iraq to extend their stay. That's illegal conscription, and there's already rebellion within the ranks. The volunteer army? Guess what? Recruitment is way off now that potential volunteers see the Bushites' inept handling of their wars. Maybe George's military-aged daughters or the kids of Halliburton executives will suddenly step forward to volunteer for America. But don't hold your breath. This is Jim Hightower saying, just as George dodged the draft in his day, he's now dodging the very real prospect that he'll impose a new draft on this generation.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, you know, it's turned into a political football, this thing. What happened to the 380 tons of high explosive, rapid detonation explosive? And all the right-wing talkers are ranting and raving that an NBC News crew came in and said, hey, you know, we don't see anything here. This just days after, perhaps the day after, the fall of Baghdad. Which was, what, about 2 weeks into the war? So, you know, maybe it got spirited out there during the combat. Maybe it got spirited out before the combat. What all these guys, and they're trying to use this as justification. They're saying, of course, on the Kerry side, they're opportunistically, and perhaps with some justification, but opportunistically nonetheless, jumping on this thing. More evidence of Bush's incompetence. May well be. It may well turn out to be, or it may turn out that Saddam had gotten rid of the stuff before we showed up, in which case it may well still be evidence of Bush's incompetence, because what it means is that when George W. Bush pulled the IAEA and the United Nations inspectors, Hans Blix and Mohammed al-Baradei, out of Iraq so that he could begin his bombing, that at that point in time, somebody, whether it was the government of Iran, whether it was the Syrians, whether it was, you know, the Baathists, whether it was Saddam, whether it was Russia. I mean, who knows? Somebody said, you know, you got 380 tons of pretty valuable explosives there. We'll give you a few million bucks for it. We just happen to have 40 trailers here. Somebody got it out of there. And I think the bottom line here, when you listen to all the hysterical, I mean, I was listening this morning on Sirius to Tony Snow, hysterical is the only word I could use to describe it, rantings of these right-wingers. The thing to keep in mind is that until we said to the UN guys, okay, you guys, get out, and we haven't allowed them back in yet, by the way. The United Nations inspectors, yesterday on Crossfire, I saw, you know, this, former Republican from Pennsylvania, former congressman, Mr. Weasel is how I think of him. And he says, well, you know, this just proves that the UN inspectors were screwing up. You know, they were useless. Well, no. Actually, no. Sorry. Now, what it shows is that there was a hornet's nest there. There are a bunch of them around the world. Anybody who thinks that Iraq is the only place on the planet where there are tons of high explosives, first of all, is deluded. There was a hornet's nest there. But it was a hornet's nest that was surrounded by the world. The United Nations had weapons inspectors there. They had atomic inspectors there. They were doing regular, you know, inspections of these things. This stuff was under seal. They were taking satellite pictures every few days and comparing them day by day. I mean, this is how they found out some, you know, months ago, that this stuff, not only was this stuff missing, but that the buildings that it was in had been dismantled. So, yeah, there was a hornet's nest there, but it was a hornet's nest that, you know, was well surrounded, under control, and probably would have self-destructed or could have been perhaps, you know, transformed, changed with a little help from us or others appropriately. But instead, we went in with a baseball bat and just started smashing at it. And now we're surprised that the bees got loose. Okay, I know hornets aren't bees. The hornets got loose. And the place is a mess. What a surprise. George W. just never figured on this. Neither did Don Rumsfeld. Neither did Dick Cheney. Maybe it's because none of them chose to participate in combat during the Vietnam War. They all had other priorities, to quote Dick Cheney. That the only guy in the entire administration to actually seen combat, Colin Powell, was going, hey, you break it, you own it, you know. Maybe you ought to think about this twice. Another Marine, a former Marine, Pat Robertson, sits down with George W. and says, you know, God told, or the Lord told him, Jesus told him, that there were going to be casualties, and he says, supremely confident, George W. Bush, the most confident man I've ever seen, supremely confident, says, oh, no, there won't be. What we are seeing here with these weapons, with these explosives missing, whether they went missing right after we forced the United Nations to withdraw from Iraq, before the bombing started, whether they went missing in the weeks between the time when the bombing started and Baghdad fell, and then this embedded NBC reporter got up to that site and said that there were they didn't see the stuff there, although they did find a lot of other explosives, which have also gone missing in the meantime, or whether the NBC guy and the troops who were there were not trained weapons inspectors and they didn't know what they were looking for necessarily, or it was in some part of the of this complex that they missed. I mean, it's not like these guys were part of a professional weapons inspection team. It was some soldiers went in there with a reporter. But no matter what, whenever this stuff went missing, after Bush pulled out the UN, The only rational way to look at this thing is we blew it. And it's going to come back to haunt us. George Bush has made the world less safe, period. He has made the Middle East. Mubarak was absolutely right. He has made the Middle East into a jihadist center. Remember Mubarak, the president of Egypt, before we invaded Iraq, said if you go into Iraq, you are going to create 100 Osama bin Ladens. Sure enough. Sure enough. Welcome to the program, friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live, coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. And this Friday, we will be beamed into 88 million homes on C-SPAN, on C-SPAN Channel 1. C-SPAN is doing local talk radio hosts throughout the week in various parts of the country. And on Friday, they're doing two national shows. They're doing mine and they're doing somebody on the right, Howie Carr. So the obligatory conservative and the obligatory liberal. I'm not sure I'm a liberal. I'm in favor of balanced budgets, and the conservatives tell me that liberals are spenders. But then they say that they're taxers, so I guess that is balanced budget. But I thought that conservatives were in favor of, well, see, it's fallen apart. It's fallen apart. But anyway, they got us. They got us. Just as one example, Ken Griffith in Albuquerque voted yesterday, or on Thursday, rather, last Thursday. Louise and I, by the way, voted yesterday. We went downtown here, Montpelier, Vermont, here in the People's Republic, and showed up and signed in and voted. I think it was, frankly, the first time in my life that I have voted, with the exception of one single candidate, that being Congressman Bernie Sanders, who's an independent, that I voted a straight Democratic ticket. As I've said many times, I don't consider myself a Democrat. I do think that those of us who view the world the way that I think that I'm reflecting the view of a lot of other people. George Carlin said it well last night, I believe it was. He said, those on the right tend to be more interested in property rights. Those on the left tend to be more interested in human rights. That's a reasonably good, actually, shorthand descriptor. That we should be infiltrating the Democratic Party and taking it over, rather than trying to, get Ralph Nader into office. I mean, voting for Ralph Nader 4 years ago, a huge mistake that I made that I will confess to. Although it was in the state of Vermont, it wasn't such a huge mistake, I suppose, here. But still, it encouraged him. And now he's out there. He's out there again this year. He's at it. I just have to share this with you. Jim Turr, one of the great comedic geniuses of our time, BlueCanyonSatire.com. And this new
What's it all about?
Ralphie?
Ralphie.
Ah, yes.
Is it just for the ego that you want?
I think so.
When it all comes down, if you get your 2%, we'll find out that Bush has won. You'll wonder what you've done.
Actually, I think you'll know.
So won't you please pull out? Ralphie,
it's unlikely. Unlikely.
Don't you think there's a reason the Republicans give you campaign cash and legal support, Ralphie? Could they know something you don't?
Yeah, could be.
They'll be realists, but you won't.
They're not much different between Bush and... And
blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah. This is great.
That's right, Ralphie.
Yeah, so what's it all about, Ralphie? There from Jim Turr and BlueCanyonSatire.com. Another great piece, and I want to return to the Ralph Nader stuff in the second or third hour of our program, some interesting news, but I want to get back to Ken Griffith here. Ken Griffith in Albuquerque voted on Thursday over and over, writes Jim Ludwig in the Albuquerque Journal, an article, an October article titled Early Voters Say Machines Fail, Wrong Choices Appear on Screens. For Griffin, the problem was every time she touched the button for John Kerry, the machine said, "Thank you for voting for George Bush." She says, "I pushed his name, but a green check mark appeared before President Bush's name. Griffith erased the vote by touching the check mark at Bush's name." That's how a voter can alter a touchscreen ballot. She again tried to vote for Kerry, but the screen again said she had voted for Bush. The third time, the screen agreed with her that her vote should go to Kerry. So apparently this is the great programming on these machines. She says she faced the same problem repeatedly as she filled out the rest of the ballot. On one item, she had to vote five or six times. Interesting. So much for Albuquerque, New Mexico's machines. Republicans are complaining about the same thing, by the way. They're saying, you know, they try to vote. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We'll take a call from Kodak right after this break. Stick around, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Tonight, the biggest thing on television continues on NBC.
The Biggest Loser.
We are all working out so hard.
Last week, these amazing contestants lost a total of 143 pounds.
Everything hurts.
My heart's at home, but I know I gotta do this for them.
But this week...
That was cruel.
The hunger is getting to them.
I'm gonna die!
The Biggest Loser, followed by Father of the Bride, Scrubs, and Law & Order SVU. All new NBC Tonight.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Iraq is the front in the war against terror. Might be because we invited them there. Perhaps there's some terrible clerical error. Maybe a faulty equation.
Yeah.
Like 911 equals U.S. invasion.
faulty equation, George Bush equals president. Come on, that's a... 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, the website tomhartman.com if you want to drop into our chat room and join one of the wisest and most intelligent conversations on all of the internet. You will find it there. Go to tomhartman.com and just click live chat. It'll drop you into the chat room in CompuServe. Got to tell you about Michael Cardigan, president of the City Council. We'll get to that in just a minute. First, Kodak in Durham, South Carolina on the line. Hey, Kodak, welcome to our program.
Yes, good evening.
Great to hear from you.
I just wanted to say, yes, I participated in the early voting. It was my first time, and the Durham League of Minority Activities had made it quite easy for us. They had did all the research on the candidate.
That's great.
And they had listed in the same order in which the ballot was, so it made voting very, very easy.
Uh-huh.
And I would also encourage people that are waiting, that don't have the option of early voting, they may want to make sure they take a pop-up chair. I went on a Sunday in the mid-afternoon before church services let out, and that was still, I guess it took us an hour, hour and a half, something like that, to actually get to the front of the line to vote.
Wow. Did you confront any of these Republican challengers who wanted to see your birth certificate and your passport?
No, I didn't. That was actually, it was very orderly, very organized. The activity people that were the people that were helping with the election came and selected the older people out of line and brought them to the front of the line.
Oh, that
very
was
organized.
That was considered.
It was done very well. I was impressed.
That's great. That's great. And this was in Durham?
Yes, Durham, North Carolina.
North Carolina?
Yes.
Oh, somehow I got South Carolina on here. Sorry about that. Now, North Carolina is not a swing state.
Well, no, we're not in play, but we're doing everything in this area possible to get the vote out, and hopefully I will be able to help in getting people to the polls on election day. I know I will in the afternoon, but during the working hours I may have to.
Or even before then. I mean, election day sounds like it's going to be a real zoo. Were you voting on electronic voting machines?
We had the paper ballots with the optical scanner.
So you filled in the little hole thing with
the line. Where you completed the line.
Uh-huh.
And then they ran it into the scanner.
Okay. All right. So you didn't have the problem that they're having in apparently in Albuquerque right now here.
No, no, we didn't.
Okay. Well, thanks for the report.
Take something to read and the pop-up chair.
There you go. Yeah.
And also, Eminem has a video coming out called Mosh.
Uh-huh.
It slams this presidency so right on. It's going to really have an impact.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope so. Go ahead.
Yeah, it should amongst the generation that, you know, that is, you know, into the MTV type, you know, crowd, and we really need to get out to vote.
Yeah. Good. Good. Thanks for the tip, Kodak, and thanks for the report from the field. Always great to hear from you. One of my favorite callers, Kodak, truck driver, listens to us on Sirius and lives in Durham, North Carolina. And, you know, in fact, one of the things that Kodak raised, and this is something that has really been troubling me, is this large number of undecided voters this year says to me that there is a large number of people in America who don't understand what the Republican and Democratic parties historically have stood for. It could be in part because, by and large, or at least to some extent, particularly the Democratic Party, have not been so consistent in recent years in standing for what they historically stood for. The Republican Party has pretty much always stood for the interests of big business. But the Democratic Party has been waffling lately, shall we say. And it just concerns me that we haven't been teaching civics, that there's not a good understanding of American history, particularly among the people of my children's generation, kids in their 20s and 30s. And we're seeing it in this belief that you have to vote for somebody based on whether you'd want to have a beer with them or whether they're a good person, blah, blah, blah. There are much larger issues at stake here. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In the dark about the policies of John Kerry and feeling bullied by George W. Bush, Brazil is undecided which candidate would be better for relations between Latin America and the U.S. That's according to Maria Alves, a co-founder of the Brazilian Workers' Party and trade union activist. Alves spoke at the University of Wisconsin in Madison on Thursday and expressed how Brazilians feel about the U.S. elections and the future of the free trade area of the Americas. Brazil has refused to give in to U.S. demands on the agreement, believing that they would hurt the country's most important exports. According to Alves, when Bush visited Brazil last year, he went on live television and tried to bully Brazil into accepting the terms.
And so he, in Brazil, went on television and said, well, we're going to do bilateral agreements with every nation of Latin America and leave Brazil out if you don't negotiate with us the way we want. I mean, that's preposterous. The answer of the Brazilian president of the ALCA was, well, go ahead. I want to see you leave 180 million people out of a common market.
The attempt at intimidation left a bad taste in the mouth of many Brazilians. However, when it comes to Kerry, there's a big question mark. Alves says the only sign Kerry has given that he will listen to Latin American concerns is in a recent statement he made on Cuba.
He said that whatever policy he would have for Cuba would be discussed with Latin American leaders. That was very interesting, because that's the first time that an American candidate says that he will take into consideration the opinion of other Latin American leaders.
On Sunday, San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom called on hotel managers to end the lockout of 4,500 union workers at 14 San Francisco hotels. Manuel Castro, member of Unite Here, Local 2.
We're striking because they want to cut our benefits, they want to cut our wages.
In addition to San Francisco, contracts have expired in Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles, and workers want to bring their contract in line with other major hotel markets for simultaneous negotiations 18 months from now. The hotels have decided to play hardball by turning what was originally a two-week strike into an indefinite lockout. The union says it has the financial resources to weather a long battle. The British Broadcasting Service will cut 6,000 jobs, nearly a quarter of its workforce, by the end of the year. The BBC has a royal charter from the British government which allows it to secure license fees from television owners, netting an income of $5.2 billion. The plan involves cutting production staff through privatization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new report by Public Citizen reveals the Bush administration blocked rules to secure chemical and nuclear plants threatening homeland security. Industry representatives have contributed almost $20 million for Republicans since 2000 and include 20 so-called Bush pioneers, individuals who've raised at least $100,000 for the Bush presidential campaign. They've also spent more than $200 million lobbying from 2002 through June 2004.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What did you do on Election Day, oh dear father of mine? What did you do on Election Day, my darling daddy? I cashed my check and cleaned my gun. Red cow.
And welcome back.
The funnies made a payment on my...
A little bumper music there from Tom Zimmerman. Good stuff. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you 27 minutes before the hour. Superior Court of Orange County Judge Jim Gray is running for the United States Senate in California. He's a libertarian. I thought it'd be interesting to get a libertarian on the air here and raise some of these issues that we have. Judge Gray, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, thank you, and good morning. It's nice to be with you.
Yeah, well, pleased to have you. There are some areas. In fact, years ago, I used to have a bumper sticker in my office that said "Vote Libertarian, Freedom Works." And back when I think it was Harry Brown back then. Am I misremembering? This was maybe 20 years ago.
Year 2000, Harry Brown ran for president.
Year 2000. Oh, that not so long ago. Okay. Anyhow, I there was a time in my life when I thought being a libertarian was kind of cool.
I hope we're going to bring that time back.
Well, you know, I've got some problems with it, and frankly, I'd like to focus first on the things that we may have in common. You're running for the United States Senate. You're running against Barbara Boxer, so this is, I'm assuming that the goal of your campaign is more to educate the electorate than it is to beat Barbara Boxer.
I think that the odds are very strong that I will not. I can tell you I have a better than zero chance of winning, but certainly it's a big mountain to climb. But
yeah.
If I make a strong showing, everybody will see our votes as the difference between winning and losing in future elections. They're going to want those votes. The only way they get them is to change their drug policy or their various policies.
Yeah.
If they change their policies, then we will have won the election.
Now, one of the big things in California that libertarians have always been, going back to the Objectivists and going back to Ayn Rand and her... A little cult that she started in New York City inducted Alan Greenspan into in her apartment back in the 1950s, where she was promoting free love and, you know, she was having affairs on the side and it ended up at the end of her marriage and it was kind of a messy thing. But she was saying that there really the government has no right to say what kind of sexual activity people engage in, what kind of drugs people take, as long as they're not driving a vehicle, that sort of thing. And these are positions that you're taking. Is that accurate?
Yes, as long as you make a distinction between adults and juveniles, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Assuming here that we're talking about consenting adults, yeah. And
yes.
So, for example, the war on pot, this war on marijuana, you see this as something that has actually harmed the United States?
Without question.
So,
I don't think there's really any question at all about that.
Tell me why.
Well, today you can talk to your young people. It's easier for them to get marijuana or any other illicit drug, for that matter, than it is alcohol. Why? Because the illegal drugs are controlled by illegal drug dealers, and they don't ask for ID. Plus, the drugs can be dangerous, and please, don't misunderstand. I've never used any form of illicit drug, not interested in it, and I want to reduce the harm in our society caused by them. But part of that harm, in large measure, is the money. We have corrupted numbers of police officers and children all around the nation, as well as around the world. We have increased medical problems. We have increased crime. We've actually increased drug usage. In Holland, for example, they have decriminalized marijuana, even for youngsters of 16 years of age or older. And the Minister of Health held a press conference and said, you know, we only have half the marijuana usage in our country as you do in the United States.
Yeah,
and he went on to explain why, saying that we have succeeded in making pot boring.
Yeah,
good lesson.
As a matter of fact, Christmas before last, or 3 years ago, right after 9/11, when the airfares were super cheap and you know, that Christmas and everything, we took our kids to Amsterdam for Christmas. Because they were just giving away frequent flyer miles. I mean, we were able to fly the whole family over there basically for free with the frequent flyer miles that I'd accumulated. And
take me with you.
And yeah, it was amazing. And the Marriott that was normally $400 a night was like $90 a night. I mean, you know, because everybody was terrified to fly. And we went into this fancy hotel right across the street from the Domrock, from the what's the museum there with the, you know, with the night watch in it and everything, you know. And,
oh yeah, night. Reich Museum.
Yeah, it's a slightly different name from that, but it's close to it. And fancy hotel, white linen tablecloth. The waiter comes over. He hands us the wine list and he hands us the pot list.
Okay.
And it was like, what's this? And he was like, you know, and it was like, you know, here's the pot you can order. Here's the wine you can order. And you know, you walk into coffee shops and there's pot. And yet, as you know, looking around the city. And, you know, you can certainly smell it in a lot of places. But what you find when you talk to people in Holland is just exactly what you said, that the kids are not using pot in Holland the way that they are in the United States. There's not as much marijuana usage in Holland among children or adults as there is in the United States because they've, as you say, they've made it boring. Why has that message, you know, this is not news. I mean, this is something that's been going on in Holland and in much of Europe, frankly, for a long, long time. Why have Americans not figured this out yet? You know, we saw what happened with Prohibition.
Of course, and we're still in prohibitionary times today. My view of that is that the government treats this as such a moneymaker that we have a prison industrial complex today in our society that is spending tens of billions, hundreds of billions of our tax money, and just like two sitting congressmen in Orange County have told me in their own words, most people in Washington realize the war on drugs is not winnable, but it's eminently fundable, and our government is addicted to the drug war funding.
It's incredibly profitable.
That makes a big difference.
It's incredibly profitable. Yes. I mean, you know, Marriott, the hotel that we were staying at in Amsterdam, one of their major profit centers is building private prisons in the United States to hold people who've been arrested for pot.
Oh, yeah. You know, we have, with regard to our three strikes laws here in California, three times more people serving a third strike, 25 years to life, for marijuana violations than for robbery, rape, and murder combined.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that sort of thing. And so we need to make this a voter objection and I hate to use the pun, but a grassroots movement to change this.
Now, I see that you're also, you say stop the invasion of privacy, roll back the Patriot Act, the USA Patriot Act. You're basically in favor of enforcing, if not the literal terms of the Fourth Amendment, certainly the intent of the Fourth Amendment, which was that government has, frankly, no damn business in our business. It's, you know, get out of our lives. Thank you very much.
Well, you know, I am a libertarian after being a lifelong Republican. And libertarians believe in three things. Liberty, of course. They also believe in individual responsibility. And they believe in reduced government, reduced intrusion of government. We all understand that we need government to make us safer and to adjudicate our disputes. But otherwise, you know, government cannot make you moral. You know, we can try, but it doesn't work. And that's why we get back to this consenting adult thing. Now, you know, my sexual practices are pretty much just like the norm. But we simply cannot force a consenting adult to do something through the law.
Yeah,
you can through family. You can through religious-based organizations. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah.
And stop trying to spend all of our tax money to harm people and put them in jail for doing what we basically are mad at them for doing.
Yeah. And so, in other words, you think that prostitution should be decriminalized as well?
Well, let me tell you. I was in the Peace Corps in Costa Rica. Costa Rica is a Catholic country. But prostitution is legalized there. And even in my small town, Palmar Norte, Costa Rica, they had two houses of prostitution. Surprising as that might sound, it worked. You know, they had medical doctors come through town every 2 weeks and make sure that they were not sick. You never saw them out on the streets. They weren't mugged. People would know where they were. They were treated with respect. You didn't have pimps, didn't have all of the disease and all of the crime. So that issue worked in Costa Rica, and I tell you, we have some lessons to learn from that.
Interesting. Okay, now let's get into some areas where I think we differ. And this is, for example, education. You point out in your campaign literature, private schools perform at about half the cost per student. right?
I don't mean to say half the cost, but certainly a less cost than we are spending in the Los Angeles Unified School District today.
Right. You know, and I've seen those studies. I mean, I'm involved in education. I've written several books about it. I'm the president of the board of directors of a private school in New Hampshire. They call the Hunter School a school for special needs kids, for ADHD kids. And I can tell you, if you look at the balance sheets of a lot of particularly smaller private schools, they can operate at a cost of $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 per student, whereas public schools very often are operating at, I think the national average is, what, either $5,600 or $6,500 per student. I forget which it is.
I use the term about $6,000, but obviously it depends where you are and what you're doing.
So it's in that neighborhood, around $6,000. But what is missing from that statistic is the fact that the private schools, by and large, that are usually being quoted in these statistics, that are quoted particularly by, I want to say right wingers. You're using these numbers. I'm not going to cast aspersions on you, but are the private schools that are very selective about their intake. They take kids who are going to do well. They're schools for the upper middle class. They're schools for very white bread students. They're schools for kids who are doing well. They're college prep schools. Or, you know, they're kind of funky places, you know, the Waldorf schools or the local Montessori schools. We run a program for severely disabled kids. Learning disabled kids. And it costs nearly $50,000 a student to provide both board and education. The educational component is running around $20,000, $25,000 a year per student. And this is completely nonprofit. And because these kids have been really, 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 really badly screwed up by the system, and in many cases they were born in ways that their brains just didn't work the same way our schools do, blah, blah. Those numbers don't generally show up. However, the public schools, by and large, are having to deal with those kind of kids. And so what you have is, whenever you compare these private school figures with public school figures, it's a terrible travesty, in my opinion, of cherry picking. You're not looking at the fact that the public schools are dealing with massively more learning disabled, more expensive to educate kids.
Well, okay, you're comparing apples with watermelons here, and it's really clear that if you're going to have a developmentally disabled or a medically handicapped child, or even one that is just a learning problem or a discipline problem, it's going to cost more money.
Right, and the public school and the public schools are full of them, and private schools generally don't take them. I mean, our school is an exception.
Schools are not full of them, but all we're saying is you can do an awful lot more if you understand the following. Who is in a better position to decide how and where your child should be educated, you or the federal government? And I've never run into anybody that says that the federal government is better able to make that decision. So if you allow responsibility down at the parental level, at the school district level, and take it away from the federal government, this one-size-fits-all, all of these forms and all of the administration and lack of responsibility, and put it there. And then if you get into a private organization where, if you know, people don't like what my school is doing, they're going to leave.
Yeah,
if
you know,
they have that ability to leave.
I don't disagree with you on any of that, but where this breaks down is when it comes to money. Where it completely breaks down, you know, it's great to say local control. I'm all in favor of local control. I'm a strong opponent of the No Child Left Behind bill for just the reasons that you identified. It is a one size fits all, and it's really basically a welfare for the testing corporations bill. I mean, it was designed, it was promoted by the testing corporations. The nation's largest testing corporation, in the first year of implementation of No Child Left Behind, which had lobbied and spent a lot of money in Congress for this bill, went from being a $400 million company to a $900 million company in 1 year.
Sure.
However, the ultimate logic of what you're saying is that a child who has the misfortune of being born in a poor community is not going to have the access to the same quality of education as a child who, by simple circumstance of birth, luck of the draw, was born into a rich community. How do you deal with that?
Well, okay. I will agree with you halfway. If you're telling me that people that have money are going to be more equal and more offered more opportunities than those without money, that's a reality of life, and I agree with that. However, otherwise it's not married to that.
I'm saying that shouldn't be a reality of life.
I mean, you know, this,
well, it is. Okay. It is. It's always going to be a reality of life. You can rail against it if you want to, but the rich are always going to have more opportunities than the poor, and I don't care what system you have.
But don't we have an obligation? Don't we have an obligation to somewhat level?
That's
okay.
What I'm saying.
Level the playing field.
I want to make it more equal.
Then you're not a libertarian.
Of course I am. I want to give an opportunity for folks to be able to get high-quality education at every level of life. And I want to spend the money necessary. And, yes, the federal government's going to have to be involved, and at least the way that our government is structured today, with funding education.
But the official libertarian position, as I understand it, is the federal government has absolutely no right in education whatsoever. That it's not in the Constitution. That therefore they shouldn't be doing it, and that it's local communities should fend for themselves. And if you're born in a coal mining community in West Virginia, where the average income is $7,000 or $8,000 a year, and the average amount of money that they have available out of their tax base for schools is $2,000 a year, and somebody else is born in New York City, in a wealthy area of town or whatever, Connecticut, tough luck. That's just the way it is.
I am not a purist, and I am not married to any of that.
Okay, so you're more pragmatic than the average libertarian.
At the moment, the federal government is going to be required to pay money for education. And I would have probably, unless you have those defects that you were talking about earlier, that's a different situation. But otherwise, I would simply have the federal government pay X dollars per child, no matter where you are in the country. And then the parents can use that money to take that child to the very best school they can find.
But isn't
homeschooling, public school, Catholic school, whatever. They can take that,
okay,
that money.
We have to wrap it up there. Judge
there.
Jim Gray, I appreciate it. JudgeGray2004.com is your website. Judge Jim Gray, Libertarian for United States Senate from California. Thanks so much for being with us, Judge Gray.
Well, good
I
luck to
it.
Us all.
Thank you.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
We the people now face a fundamental choice. Take back our government or do nothing and become the victims of tyranny and empire.
That is the message in a revealing new book by Tom Hartman, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People takes a hard look at America's past, present, and future. You'll find out that the Patriot Act is not unique. In 1798, President John Adams pushed the Alien and Sedition Act through a Federalist Congress, enabling him to have his unpatriotic critics arrested and imprisoned, putting numerous opposition newspapers out of business. While a bit more subtle, Hartman says, this administration is likewise attempting to suppress any criticism, to eradicate any opposition.
Progressive talk show host Janine Garofalo says, read this book for a jolt of illumination. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is a Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. After hearing reports of serious workplace violations, the Brooklyn-based Fifth Avenue Committee launched an investigation of their own with shocking results. Artemino Guerra is organizing director for the Fifth Avenue Committee.
The Fifth Avenue Committee is a nonprofit, community-based organization here in Brooklyn, New York. We work primarily on the issues of housing and affordable housing development. And just lately, we've been looking at all the workers that are in our midst due to this recent gentrification of South Brooklyn, workers mainly in the low-wage industries in the neighborhood, like restaurants and supermarkets and green groceries.
In a recently revealed report, organizers document several cases where supermarket janitors were working 14-hour shifts overnight without paid overtime.
And not only are they not getting overtime or, in many cases, not even minimum wage, but supermarket managers locked them in.
Guerra found 36 grocery stores that were locking in their workers overnight.
It's illegal. They're violating fire code regulations. We're violating, obviously, the OSHA standards, you know, safety and health standards for the workplace. They're violating, somebody will even claim that they're violating the civil rights of these workers by falsely imprisoning them. They do it because they can, and they do it because the workers are very vulnerable and they're not going to complain.
After the fire department intervened, the groceries stopped the lock-ins, but Guerra believes the practice is widespread in Brooklyn.
This is happening all over the city, and we have reasons to believe this is sort of an industry practice.
Currently, Guerra is organizing a consumer campaign to ask neighborhood residents to pressure employers to raise wages by $1 per hour. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Every time we think about same-sex parents, oh my gosh, we exclaim. I mean, to people who want to provide a protective and nurturing family environment, have they no shame? It's so deviant. It's the Lord's holy word, as my second wife said to my third.
See, that's what we need to do. If you want to protect the family in the United States, do what Ireland had done up until about 15 years ago. Make divorce illegal. Real simple. Real simple. Limbaugh, been through three wives, 15 years in jail. Off you go. He can take drugs if he wants, but you can't get divorced. We're supporting the family here. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yes, Tom, looking forward to your appearance on C-SPAN this Friday.
Yeah, it should be entertaining. Yeah, you get to see what a mess our studio is.
You going to have Bernie with you there?
Yeah, Bernie's going to be here for the first hour.
Okay, well, I want to get right to the point here. I was watching the McLaughlin Group last week, and as you know, Pat Buchanan has this magazine, The American Conservative.
Right.
They're very critical of the neocons and the conduct of the war, and yet John McLaughlin, who seems to be more anti-war even than Buchanan, brought it to my attention, everyone else that was watching, that I guess the magazine has four editors. One endorsed John Kerry.
That's right.
I believe two endorsed the Constitutional Party candidate, Michael Perutka, and Pat is endorsing George Bush. Now,
that's right.
None of us can read Pat's mind. John McLaughlin was insinuating that maybe Pat's trying to call back to the Republican Party, but I tell you, this man has been so critical of Bush, his policy, and yet he seems to be divorcing George Bush, the individual, from his policies. It's like Bush's policies are horrible, but he's such an honorable man, therefore we have to vote for him. What do you make of that?
It's raw, naked power. I just finished reading last week Pat Buchanan's book, Where the Right Went Wrong.
Right.
And I actually, you know, I do a book review for BuzzFlash every month.
Oh, do you?
And in fact, next month it's going to be George Lakoff's book. This month it's Leni Riefenstahl's movie, Triumph of the Will. And I actually thought about recommending Pat Buchanan's book, except that the last third of it, he goes into this Republican rah-rah thing. But the first two-thirds of his book is just an absolute indictment of this administration, and one of the most brilliant ones that I've read, frankly.
Sure.
Pat Buchanan gets it on a lot of levels. The problem is he understands, you know, it's just like my saying, you know, I voted straight Democratic even though I'm not a Democrat, and I think that what we need to be doing is infiltrating and taking over the Democratic Party, because if you want to have that power on a national level, you need the power of a national party. Pat
sure.
Buchanan understands that about the Republican Party. He got it from being on the outside in the Reform Party, that he's not going anywhere without the Republicans. And that's, in my opinion, why he's endorsing Bush. It's just pure, raw, naked party politics. That's the bottom line.
He says he wants to take over the party, but he's going to wait till 2008.
Yeah, well, you know, and infiltrated in the process. I mean, this is how they got Reagan in the first place, and they're going to try and do it again. Now the problem that they've got, instead of Republican moderates, is Republican extremists, the neocons, and they're going to try and do something about that. Rick, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In the dark about the policies of John Kerry and feeling bullied by George W. Bush, Brazil is undecided which candidate would be better for relations between Latin America and the U.S. That's according to Maria Alves, a co-founder of the Brazilian Workers' Party and trade union activist. Alves spoke at the University of Wisconsin in Madison on Thursday and expressed how Brazilians feel about the U.S. elections and the future of the free trade area of the Americas. Brazil has refused to give in to U.S. demands on the agreement, believing that they would hurt the country's most important exports. According to Alves, when Bush visited Brazil last year, he went on live television and tried to bully Brazil into accepting the terms.
And so he, in Brazil, went on television and said, well, we're going to do bilateral agreements with every nation of Latin America and leave Brazil out if you don't negotiate with us the way we want. I mean, that's preposterous. The answer of the Brazilian president of the ALCA was, well, go ahead. I want to see you leave 180 million people out of a common market.
The attempt at intimidation left a bad taste in the mouth of many Brazilians. However, when it comes to Kerry, there is a big question mark. Alves says the only sign Kerry has given that he will listen to Latin American concerns is in a recent statement he made on Cuba.
He said that whatever policy he would have for Cuba would be discussed with Latin American leaders. That was very interesting, because that's the first time that an American candidate says that he will take into consideration the opinion of other Latin American leaders.
On Sunday, San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom called on hotel managers to end the lockout of 4,500 union workers at 14 San Francisco hotels. Manuel Castro, member of Unite Here, Local 2.
We're striking because they want to cut our benefits, they want to cut our wages.
In addition to San Francisco, contracts have expired in Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles, and workers want to bring their contract in line with other major hotel markets for simultaneous negotiations 18 months from now. The hotels have decided to play hardball by turning what was originally a two-week strike into an indefinite lockout. The union says it has the financial resources to weather a long battle. The British Broadcasting Service will cut 6,000 jobs, nearly a quarter of its workforce, by the end of the year. The BBC has a royal charter from the British government which allows it to secure license fees from television owners, netting an income of $5.2 billion. The plan involves cutting production staff through privatization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new report by Public Citizen reveals the Bush administration blocked rules to secure chemical and nuclear plants threatening homeland security. Industry representatives have contributed almost $20 million for Republicans since 2000 and include 20 so-called Bush pioneers, individuals who've raised at least $100,000 for the Bush presidential campaign. They've also spent more than $200 million lobbying from 2002 through June 2004.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I had survived two previous rounds of layoffs, and then the third round got me. They wiped out my whole department. I was forced to stop paying credit card payments. I had to file bankruptcy. I had to be rushed to the hospital for an emergency appendectomy, for which I'm not insured. How can we be the only westernized country without national health care? I can't believe that this is the best we can do. There's got to be a better way. I'm voting for John Kerry.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
At last, the Bush team has come up with a secret weapon to deal with their disastrous handling of the Iraq war. Yellow smiley face stickers. In a joint effort by top government officials and the Bush presidential campaign, your and my tax dollars are being spent on a propaganda push in our country to spread what the Pentagon calls good news about Bush's Iraq occupation. In a five-page memo titled Guidance to Commanders, Donnie Rumsfeld himself pushes the propaganda effort, which involves importing Iraqis to make presentations on U.S. military bases. They assemble soldiers to form the audiences, and base commanders are urged to market these appearances effectively by bringing in the local media and prominent citizens. These show-and-tell talks are, quote, designed to be uplifting accounts with good news messages, says Donnie's memo, adding that these events are positive public relations opportunities. Another part of the news spin is to halt distribution of negative news. A government contractor named Kroll Security International issues daily factual reports on developments in Iraq. Obviously, Kroll has had to deliver lots of bad news, including reports detailing the spreading attacks by insurgents. So, in September, the government simply stopped sending the Kroll reports to members of Congress and other outsiders. Then there was September's extremely rosy speech to Congress by Ayad Alawi, Bush's hand-picked leader of Iraq's interim government. Did Alawi get speech-writing help from the Bushites? None that I know of, Georgia's PR flack recently fibbed. In fact, both a Bush campaign aide and U.S. Embassy officials in Iraq helped Alawi write the speech and practice his delivery. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's bad enough that we're paying so steeply for Bush's war of lies. Why should we also be taxed for a blatant propaganda campaign to boost Bush's election chances?
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold, hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it's falling apart already. I mentioned it at the beginning of the first hour of the program, 1 hour ago this minute, I had mentioned to you that the right-wing spinmeisters were all hysterically going, oh, no, you know, NBC had a reporter in there looking at these 380 tons of highly explosive stuff, and it was gone when they got there. And that, of course, has been, ever since midday yesterday, the official, Karl Rove actually first rolled this thing out. The official Republican line was, we didn't lose this stuff. It got lost sometime between the time that we pulled the United Nations weapons inspectors out and the time that we got to Baghdad, which was about a three-week period, more or less. Somehow they think that makes them not responsible for it. But even that now has unraveled. Just in the last hour, George Bush's continuing efforts to avoid responsibility for failing to secure 380 tons of highly dangerous explosives in Iraq just took another blow. The reporter who was actually traveling with the 101st Airborne in the reports cited by the Bush campaign has clarified that the unit was not there to secure the massive weapons complex, and it was merely a, quote, pit stop, end quote, on their way to Baghdad. This is just what I suggested an hour ago, that in all probability, these soldiers were not trained weapons inspectors. This reporter was not a trained weapon inspector. And if they looked around and said, gee, we don't see anything that looks like high explosives, how would they know? Turns out, the stuff in all probability was still there, and the way that we know is the way that the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Association, the UN agency, discovered some months ago that the stuff was missing when they first let Condi Rice know, and she says she told George Bush about 10 days ago. The way that they found out was by looking at satellite photos and watching over a period of days as the building was dismantled and all the stuff was hauled away. And they're saying to the United States, look out, guys! So anyhow, I just had to... And to start out with that, because this is, I'm telling you, this has been the right wing. These guys are hysterical about this, because they realize that it demonstrates the insanity, the stupidity, the incompetence is the word. You know, to quote Republican Senator Richard Lugar, the incompetence of the Bush administration. And the naivete to think that you can just invade a country, any country in the world, and not have nationalistic response when you occupy it and you bring in your own corporations and pay them very well while you don't allow local businesses and local contractors to get a piece of the action. It's just nuts. But anyway, we'll come back to that, I'm sure. I you know, as I said in the first hour, I didn't want to rant on too much about this because the situation I was sure was still evolving, and sure enough, here it has. But I think that, you know, personal, single-level activism at the level of you and me is like a really critical thing. And every now and then I want to get on the program people who are out there doing stuff who are not being profiled in the New York Times. People who are doing the important work of promoting democracy in the United States and yet don't have, you know, they haven't written a book or they don't have a radio show or they don't have a publicist or whatever. They're just out doing it. And Jerry Reilly first came to my attention because the publisher of one of my books, We the People, A Call to Take Back America, the illustrated book, Gene Latimer, the publisher, said, you know, he's actually had a number of people call and order books, this book, by the case to give away to friends of theirs. And he said, this guy, Jerry Reilly, has been using the book to promote democracy. They got a study group going, and it's just one small part of a whole bunch of larger things that he's doing. And so I wanted to get Jerry on, not because he's plugging my book, because I really don't want to make this about that, but because I've discovered that he's doing so many other things, and I think he has a lesson for all of us. I think he can teach all of us something about how individuals can get involved. Jerry Reilly, a retired janitor in Seattle, Washington. Is that right, Jerry?
Right.
Hey.
excuse me.
Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a great honor. You're one of my heroes,
well,
man.
Well, thank you. I mean, what you're doing, I mean, this is heroic stuff. This book study group, did you start this or are you participating in it?
Well, I was a prime mover in it, yes.
Okay. And how often do you get...
It started in June, and meantime, I bought some of your books, and... one of our reverend at church read it, and he thought, "Oh my, this is great! We got to do a book study group on this."
So
that's how that.
So this evolved out of your church, actually.
Buying more books.
Yeah, And you're getting into other books beyond just mine, I'm assuming.
My hearing is very bad, Tom.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, and I'll crank up the volume here a little bit, Jerry. Corporate personhood. You're getting involved with corporate personhood. Tell us about that.
Well, that's what I was hoping to do, was get some sort of an action group started here. That we would go out and start doing things about corporate personhood. And what I find is that it's kind of difficult to get people to do actions. They like to read the book and sit around and talk about it, but it's hard to get them to do the actions. Well,
But that's the first step, though, isn't it, is to educate
people? Right. So along came this group called Reclaim Democracy, and they formed a local chapter.
Yep.
And their primary issue is corporate personhood and finding ways to get rid of it.
Yep.
Well, so I'm kind of spinning off some members of my book group to that organization and kind of going on to other things. We're involved in a lot of different activities at the church. And of course, a lot of the people right now are in our group are sort of out there trying to elect us a good president this year.
Yeah, but you're all
this nonsense that we got coming out of D.C. now. And so we didn't even have a meeting in the month of October so people could concentrate on these more important issues.
Yeah, we should let our listeners know that Reclaim Democracy, their website is reclaimdemocracy.org. The group is run by a fellow by the name of Jeff Milchen out of Montana. Jeff is a good friend, and this is a great organization. And they are setting up groups all over the United States. We're talking to Jerry Riley, a retired guy in Seattle who has started a book study group. He's participating in the corporate personhood movement. He's participating with Reclaim Democracy. You're part of the peace movement. You're affiliated with Veterans for Peace, Jerry.
Right.
And
a great organization, Tom.
Okay. And tell us about the 10th city. Louise said that you were involved in a 10th city in Seattle.
Well, yeah. Our church, which is very active in social justice issues, invited Tent City in Seattle, which is a place for homeless people to live in their tents because, they're homeless.
Yeah.
So twice now in the past 4 years or so, we've had them in our parking lot. And it was a very unifying for our church, and the neighborhood at first greatly opposed this, but they eventually, after seeing what was going on, they accepted it. And the second time we did it, there was no opposition at all.
Jerry, who mostly are these homeless people? I mean, are they men, women, families? Are they the
This particular group, there were no children, although there are, I think a lot of the homeless are children.
Yeah.
But this was just a group of people who were mostly working people, but they're not making enough money to be able to buy a house or even rent an apartment.
Amazing.
They're the working poor.
So during the day they go off and work, and at night they come back and sleep in the tents in the parking lot in your church.
Right. So this is just a temporary fix that enables them to have a safe place to stay, and they have a cell phone for the group so they can contact potential employers and that sort of thing.
You know, Jerry, the last time this kind of thing happened in the United States was in the late 1920s, early 1930s. These little tent cities were springing up around the United States of homeless people. They called them Hoovervilles after President Herbert Hoover.
Right.
Have you guys thought about calling your tent city Bushville?
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I'm seeing Bushville springing up all over in America. I mean, it really started with Reagan. When Reagan declared war on the middle class, and he came into office, a quarter of the workforce in America was unionized. Half of all American workers could raise a family, put their kids through school, pay for their medical expenses, and have a retirement on a single wage earner's salary. Now we're down to 8% of the private workforce. I mean, this is, the 30 years here, 20-some-odd years of relentless relentless conservative assault on the economic and social fabric of this country. It's taking its toll, although the rich are certainly getting richer. When these multimillionaire TV hosts go on and say, oh, the economy is good, looking better, it's true for them. So,
well, I think Social Security is the next target, Tom.
Oh yeah.
They're already working on it.
Yep, they want the big banking corporations. Oh, they're just drooling at the money that they can make churning those things over. Jerry, just to wrap this up, how do people get involved in these kind of? What's your advice to somebody who wants to get involved in local social action programs? Where does a person start?
Oh heavens. You can do it a lot of different ways. You can write letters to the editor. I do that. I've done a couple in the last couple of days. You can call your local representatives. You can get involved in quote political party, although that's not my bag. I decided I don't really have much respect for either of these parties. They're all part of the same regime, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And, there are just so many things I can't even think of.
Yeah.
So you're
working through the independent groups, the Veterans for Peace, the ReclaimDemocracy.org, through your church, putting together independent book study groups. These are all great things. Jerry Riley, thanks so much for being with us.
I just wanted to highlight you. See you out in Seattle someday.
I hope so. It's good to see you. Great to have you here, and thanks for keep up the great work. I do appreciate it. Jerry Riley there with us, calling from Seattle. 1-866-889-8894. We've got about a minute left in this segment. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, I just got a concern about a lot of the penetration of organized crime into unions, and maybe that's a lot of the problem we've got. And I'm just kind of wondering what your thoughts might be on how we reduce organized crime in unions.
Well, I think we do the same way that we reduce organized crime in corporations, as you saw with Enron and whatnot. I mean, it's a different form of organized crime, but it's organized crime nonetheless. You pass laws against it and you enforce them aggressively. It's really simple. Very straightforward.
So, would this be at the federal level, the state level? What do you think?
Well, if you have a union or if you have a corporation that's operating in more than one state, you can certainly bring federal charges to bear on it. Elliot Spitzer's going after organized crime in the boardrooms, in multinational corporations in New York State. So, you know, it can be, if you've got somebody. See, the problem was, during the 40s, 50s, and 60s, when so much of this stuff, the infiltration of the unions with organized crime was going on, Carlos Marcello and Sandra Travicanti had J. Edgar Hoover in their pocket because they were blackmailing him because he was gay and he was afraid to do anything about it. I think that was part of the problem. Anyhow, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S. is a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on the clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Call me a chicken hawk. Proud to be a chicken hawk. The loyal armchair jock. Let's check that lucky stock.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Michael Cardigan, the president of the Albuquerque City Council. Same problem that Kim Griffith had, according to Jim Ludwig in the Albuquerque Journal today. I cast my vote for president, I voted for Kerry, and a check mark for Bush appeared, he said. He reported the problem immediately and was shown how to alter the ballot. Cardigan says he doesn't think he made a mistake the first time. He said, quote, I was extremely careful to accurately touch the button for my choice for president, end quote, but the check mark appeared by the wrong name, just by coincidence by George W. Bush's name. Remember two years ago in Florida? And in Texas, in the 2002 elections, in all the governor races and so many of the Senate races and House races, the exact same thing was happening with touchscreen machines. Particularly, most of the complaints out of Florida were that people would try to vote for Jeb Bush's opponent, and it would record as a vote for Jeb Bush, and boom, it was gone before they could do anything about it. Interesting. Just to finish up on what I was saying to Chuck in Los Alamos, I think we saw this rise of organized crime in the United States, not just in the union movement, but all over, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And it was a terrible, terrible thing. It was a horrible, horrible time in American history. And frankly, I believe that the mafia, that the mob, in one part of it, Carlos Marcello and Sandro Trafficante, were largely responsible even for the murder of Jack Kennedy, of one of the presidents of the United States. Mafia Kingfish, John Davis's book, one of the best books on this topic. And the reason why this kind of crime wasn't being prosecuted by the FBI was because J. Edgar Hoover was, right up until Bobby Kennedy became Attorney General, there had been, until the Kennedys came into office, there had not in any single year been more than 20 prosecutions of organized crime in the United States. There were over 700 the first year of the Kennedy administration. And the reason why was because J. Edgar Hoover had been saying all this time, and Nixon had been going along with him, that, oh, there's no such thing as organized crime. And the reason why was because twice a year, him and Clyde went down to Florida where Santos Trafficante owned a racetrack, and Trafficante put him up and gave money to gamble with and fed them young boys, and they had a great time, and Trafficante took pictures. And Anthony Summers documented this very well in his book Private and Confidential. It is not in dispute anymore. It was made into a TV movie. I know Anthony Summers. He's a good, solid reporter. He wrote one of the best of the first of the early Kennedy books, called Conspiracy, but his book on Hoover is brilliant. He also wrote one of the greatest biographies of Marilyn Monroe. And that, I think, was the problem. I don't think the problem was unions per se. I think the problem was J. Edgar Hoover was so corrupt that this kind of corruption was just happening. It was happening in corporations as well. And now we're seeing most of the organized crime is not in the unions. It's in the boardrooms. It just, you know, it's just not called the mafia anymore. But they're still running. It's still crime. Crump in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the line. Our number 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Crump, what's up?
It's Mrs. Crump.
Mrs. Crump, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I just discovered you about 3 weeks ago. I didn't even know you existed, and you're like a real fresh air in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Well, bless you. Thank you.
I don't care what you turn on. It's all radical conservatives around here.
Well, it's changing. I think America, you know, even conservative Americans, whatever that means, you know, these days, are increasingly interested in hearing multiple points of view.
I have one that's way too late for the election, and then I have a question. The one that's way too late is how come no one has ever brought up what Baby Bush's lottery draft number was?
George W., you mean?
The young one.
Yeah.
No one has ever brought that up, and you know that it had to be a low number.
Yeah.
Or he would not have signed up for the National Guard, which back then no one from the National Guard.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure that was covered in one of those biographies that talked about when he joined the Guard, because he had to jump ahead of 300 people to get in when he had to get in, otherwise he would have been drafted. So that had to have...
No one brought up his number, though.
That's interesting. Okay, you said you had one other point. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll take a break here. First-time caller, be very, very kind to you. 29 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In the dark about the policies of John Kerry and feeling bullied by George W. Bush, Brazil is undecided which candidate would be better for relations between Latin America and the U.S. That's according to Maria Alves, a co-founder of the Brazilian Workers' Party and trade union activist. Alves spoke at the University of Wisconsin in Madison on Thursday and expressed how Brazilians feel about the U.S. elections and the future of the free trade area of the Americas. Brazil has refused to give in to U.S. demands on the agreement, believing that they would hurt the country's most important exports. According to Alves, when Bush visited Brazil last year, he went on live television and tried to bully Brazil into accepting the terms.
And so he, in Brazil, went on television and said, well, we're going to do bilateral agreements with every nation of Latin America and leave Brazil out if you don't negotiate with us the way we want. I mean, that's preposterous. The answer of the Brazilian president of the ALCA was, well, go ahead. I want to see you leave 180 million people out of a common market.
The attempt at intimidation left a bad taste in the mouth of many Brazilians. However, when it comes to Kerry, there is a big question mark. Alves says the only sign Kerry has given that he will listen to Latin American concerns is in a recent statement he made on Cuba.
He said that whatever policy he would have for Cuba would be discussed with Latin American leaders. Jews. That was very interesting, because that's the first time that an American candidate says that he will take into consideration the opinion of other Latin American leaders.
On Sunday, San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom called on hotel managers to end the lockout of 4,500 union workers at 14 San Francisco hotels. Manuel Castro, member of Unite Here, Local 2.
We're striking because they want to cut our benefits, they want to cut our wages.
In addition to San Francisco, contracts have expired in Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles, and workers want to bring their contract in line with other major hotel markets for simultaneous negotiations 18 months from now. The hotels have decided to play hardball by turning what was originally a two-week strike into an indefinite lockout. The union says it has the financial resources to weather a long battle. The British Broadcasting Service will cut 6,000 jobs, nearly a quarter of its workforce, by the end of the year. The BBC has a royal charter from the British government which allows it to secure license fees from television owners, netting an income of $5.2 billion. The plan involves cutting production staff through privatization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new report by Public Citizen reveals the Bush administration blocked rules to secure chemical and nuclear plants, threatening homeland security. Industry representatives have contributed almost $20 million for Republicans since 2000 and include 20 so-called Bush pioneers, individuals who've raised at least $100,000 for the Bush presidential campaign. They've also spent more than $200 million lobbying from 2002 through June 2004.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
America is an apple pie with a few bad apples right toward the top.
We can take care of that on November 2nd. And those of you who can vote early, we can take care of that right now. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We were talking with Mrs. Crump in Grand Rapids just before the break, and you said you had one other point you wanted to make, and I've got Alan Ratner on the line, our talk radio news service person. I want to get right to her right away, so if we can make it kind of quick, okay?
Yes, it's actually a question. Okay. My financial advisor's wife informed me that when my premium went up, will be going up on my for my Medicare.
Right.
Taken out of my Social Security, that was not, I call him Baby Bush, whatever,
yeah.
Fault, that this was put through during the Clinton administration in the late 90s.
That's true, by a Republican Congress, yeah.
Oh, it is true then.
Well, yeah, and the Republicans have controlled Congress for quite a few years. Yeah, no, that George Bush didn't just order that increase. That increase was mandated by law, and that law was
at
least 5-6 years old. She's right.
Oh,
yeah, she's right. There's a lot of cheap shotting going on on both sides this year. The problem, in my opinion, is that a lot of the cheap shots that are coming out of the Republican side are not just cheap shots, you know, not just taking advantage of the discomfort of somebody having been the, you know, for example, Bush being the guy who has to implement the increase, but outright lies are coming out of the Republican side, unfortunately. There are a few on the Democratic side, but mostly they tend to be exaggerations. This is one of those.
So, okay, that's what I wondered. I am an independent like you.
Yeah.
And one of the other thing I do like about your station and you, I'm not hearing this nastiness.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'll
It's
I'll do
very important.
I think it is, too. I think it's important that we bring civilized discourse back to the
yes.
United States. And
okay.
And thank you for the call, Mrs.
Okay,
Trump. I
bye-bye.
Appreciate it. And along those lines, let's go to one of the most civilized discourse people I know, Ellen Ratner. Ellen, it was so great seeing you last Friday at the Heritage Foundation at that gig. You there? Ellen?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, it was so great seeing you last Friday at the Heritage Foundation.
It was great seeing you. I'm sorry, I mean, as you know, I'm sort of at the edge of losing my voice completely.
Oh, my.
But I'm actually on my way out, where I will call you tomorrow, to Minnesota, one of the swing states. And on Election Day, I will be in New Hampshire, and Adam Sharon will be in Florida, and Greg Gorman will be in Pennsylvania for you. So
it should be a wild time.
It should be a wild time. I'm actually not here to report a whole lot of news, because there isn't a whole lot other than the campaign trail. But I think one of the most interesting things is that I had dinner last night, just four of us, with none other than Chairman McAuliffe of the Democratic Party. And he, I mean, he had no reason, you know, this was a dinner among friends, no reason to BS me in any way, shape, or form. They really, in their heart of hearts, believe that they are winning this election.
Interesting. Interesting. Oh, I see from we have Victoria Jones on line three here. You're on line
right,
six.
Right, she's going to add to the mix.
Her. Yeah, okay. We've got Victoria. That's interesting. The Terry McAuliffe. When you look at the numbers in the swing states, it's increasingly looking like it's going to be a Kerry victory, at least electorally.
Well, that's the issue. It could be exactly the opposite of last time, and it looks as if Kerry may win the electoral votes, and you know what? That's all that counts.
Yeah.
We found out in the last election.
Yeah, and well, that, unless you've got the Supreme Court on your side, too.
Right.
By the way, for both of you, on Friday when you call in, C-SPAN is going to have a camera crew here, and they're going to be broadcasting this program live all 3 hours, so noon to 3 Eastern time, on C-SPAN Channel 1, coast to coast, 88 million people. So.
Well, that's great.
We'll have the Talk Radio News Service giving our daily excellent, brilliant report on C-SPAN also.
Well, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, should be fun. So, Victoria, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you.
And I'm not sure where I should start here. Ellen...
I'll start with Victoria. I mean, Victoria, I was just telling Tom about my dinner with Terry McAuliffe last night.
Yeah.
Yes, so, very interesting.
Yeah, so
very interesting indeed.
Victoria, what's the news that you're seeing and hearing?
Well, I think a lot of people are still trying to come to grips with the news out of the Supreme Court about Chief Justice Rehnquist and what this is going to mean for the election, or whether this news and the possibility of capitalizing on it, which is what both sides are surely going to try and do, has almost happened too late for the Supreme Court to start to become a major issue. I mean, it's always been on the back burner, but it really hasn't been talked about that much. So there's a fair amount of discussion of that and trying to figure that one out. Obviously, President Clinton getting back on the campaign trail yesterday and the movements of the different candidates today is big, as are the developments in the 380 tons of missing explosives in Iraq. As that story continues to unravel, and certain individuals' versions of it seem to be possibly unraveling. At this point, it's so complicated that I couldn't even do it with a diagram.
You know, it was interesting. Our military correspondent said to me today, Victoria and Tom, that there are still munitions dumps that are not guarded. That, in fact, they just did a terrible job. Whether you want to believe that the munitions left there early or left there after the war or before the war isn't really the issue. The issue is there have been things that are unguarded.
Yeah, you know, well, what's interesting is the all the right-wingers are just, you know, foaming at the mouth about this morning and yesterday afternoon, ever since NBC announced that one of their embedded reporters had been at that ammunition dump as, you know, on the way into Baghdad and hadn't seen any of these high explosives there. Well, it turns out that person was a woman by the name of Lai Lingju, and she was interviewed by Amy Robach about 2 hours ago on MSNBC. And here, and in the transcript, she says, Amy Robach says, it's still unclear when these explosives disappeared. Here to shed some light is Lai Ling. She was part of an NBC News crew that traveled to that facility with 101st Airborne Division back in April of 2003. Lai Ling says, when we went into the area, we were actually leaving Karbala, and we were initially headed to Baghdad in the 101st Airborne 2nd Brigade. The situation in Baghdad, you know, blah-de-blah. She's talking about why they got there. As a result, they had trouble figuring out who was going to take what part of it. They sent us over to this area. We didn't know it as the Kakaf facility at that point, but then they did bring us over there. We stayed there for a while. We stayed overnight, almost 24 hours, and we walked around. We saw the bunkers that had been bombed, and that exposed all the ordnance that just lied dormant in the desert. And then Amy Robach says, well, was there a search at all underway, or did a search ensue for explosives once you got there? Ling Lai says, no, there wasn't a search. The mission of the brigade was to get to Baghdad. It was more of a pit stop for us. And, you know, the searching, I mean, certainly some of the soldiers head off on their own, looking through the bunkers just to look around at the vast amount of ordnance lying around. But as far as we could tell, there was no move to secure the weapons, nothing to keep the looters away. There was, at that point, the roads were shut off, so it would have been difficult for the looters to get there. But for the 101st Airborne, nothing for the 101st Airborne 2nd Brigade. They were, once they were in Baghdad, it was all about Baghdad, you know, and then they ended up moving north to Mosul. Once we left that area, that was the last the brigade had anything to do with that area. In other words, these people were not weapons inspectors. They didn't go in. They didn't necessarily even know what to look for.
There's 100 buildings, Victoria said, right?
That's right.
This is a huge area.
It's huge. It's a huge area. It's not like one warehouse.
Yeah. So the right-wing talking points that have been, I mean, just hysterically, this morning I'm flipping around the dial, you know, just listening to these people foaming, just fell apart. Just completely fell apart. I have a question for the two of you about the Supreme Court thing. It seems to me that if the Supreme Court goes into play, that if the Supreme Court, the issue of the fact that the next president is going to appoint at least one Supreme Court justice is raised, particularly if it's Rehnquist, who's already perceived by the right as being on their side, particularly with regard to the abortion issue, that he's anti-Roe v. Wade, that this is going to do more to energize the Republican base than the Democratic base. And the reason that I think that that's the case is because there are all these Republicans and conservatives, particularly younger ones, younger folks, who... And you see them interviewed. You know, Chris Matthews did a great job with this. He was at one of these universities before the debates, and he just went down the row, and he was asking people, do you think abortion should be outlawed? Yes, 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 all these people who had Bush signs. And then he started to say, what do you think should be done to the women who get abortions then? Should we put them in prison? Should we execute them? And they were like, well, there shouldn't be, you know, they put them in prison. What are you talking about? And he says, well, you want to make it illegal. And they said, well, no, it should be stopped. But he says, well, who, you know, you're going to put the doctors in jail? Well, maybe, you know, it's like they haven't thought it through. They have this ideal of, you know, there not being abortions, but they don't realize that the force of law means guns and prisons and things like that. On the other hand, other than people in my age, you know, I'm in my 50s, I mean, other than people my age and older who still remember when abortion was illegal in the United States, I think the younger generation can't even imagine what it would be like to be illegal. So I'm concerned that this is actually, you know, particularly since it's Rehnquist, if he's replaced by a liberal, by Kerry, it may solidify Roe v. Wade rather than reverse it, that I think this is going to work more to the benefit of Republicans and Democrats. What's the take of what are your takes on this? What do you think, Ellen?
Well, I think that I'm not sure it will, because I think that people want to preserve the Supreme Court, but I think a lot of the Republicans are feeling like, you know, they're not as energized. They're more energized by the gay marriage issue, et cetera. I mean, they're energized by abortion, but I don't think the Supreme Court issue moves them that much.
You don't think that usually when people are talking about the Supreme Court?
They would if they thought the Supreme Court was really up for grabs. I think that they think that Bush will, you know, keep his hand up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when he was talking about Dred Scott, he was really talking about Roe v. Wade. Everybody in the anti-abortion movement knows that.
I'm not saying that it isn't an issue. I just don't think it's a really, really hot issue.
Yeah, okay. And Victoria, your thoughts?
Well, I think that certainly liberal women, young women born after 1970, don't really seem to believe that it's possible that it could ever be overturned or to have any conception of what that could mean.
Yeah, or even born after 1960.
Yeah. Right. So I just think that they would be much less likely to get energized and go to the polls specifically for that reason. They just don't believe it.
Yeah, and if Bush gets elected, boy, are they in for a surprise. Well,
are they ever?
Yeah. Any final news here before we move on? Before I move along,
Victoria.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you've been talking about how apparently CBS planned to release the story about the 380 tons of explosives in 60 Minutes on Halloween night, just before the election, apparently. And was scooped by the New York Times, with whom they were working. Mm. And Republicans are foaming at the mouth about this because they, you know, they're saying that it was going to be outrageous that it was going to come out 2 days before the election.
An October surprise.
Yes, last day of October.
Yeah, interesting. Well, the drama continues to unfold. Victoria Jones, Ellen Ratner, the Talk Radio News Service, thank you so much to both of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And
thank
we look forward to talking to you tomorrow. Okay, have a good one. 15 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's take a call from Tony in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Tony, welcome to the show.
Hello, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Tony?
Oh, nothing.
Just another thing for Grand Rapids. I'd like to say thanks for your show being on there. It's kind of like coming home every day on the radio.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, the way to say thanks, though, the best way to say thanks to any of our listeners anywhere is to patronize the local sponsors. Of course, our national sponsors like Small Dog Electronics, you know, we like that. But the local radio stations are going to be most enthusiastic about keeping programs like this on the air if their sponsors are getting business from it. This is commercial radio. So
all right.
just as a heads up.
What I called in for was to talk about the abortion thing.
Yes.
And I am a young person myself. I'm 20 years old. And the thing I see about the abortion, I'm not for abortion myself. I really don't think it's right. But I think it still should be legal because if it was illegal, it would be done in a less safe place, and like in an uncontrolled environment. It would be less safe for the woman. People are still going to get these, but the way it is right now, it's a lot safer and cleaner.
Yeah, and it was. When I was a kid, I never knew anybody who died from an abortion, but there was a girl in the high school that I went to who died from an illegal abortion. This was like in 1964, 65, something like that. Absolutely. And I'm not, you know, if one of my kids, I have two daughters, if one of my kids was contemplating an abortion, I would not insert my two cents into it. Let me pull that out. If I was... See, here's the problem, Tony. You and I are guys, and it's like I think it's almost impossible for us to really understand what it might be. You know, what kind of an internal struggle that would really be. I really think that only women should be allowed to vote on this issue if it ever comes to a vote.
Pretty much, because we really can't give birth.
Yeah. And this is just not a men's issue, and I think it's just wrong that men have been making these decisions and trying to impose these decisions for so long. You know, as I said, I would be very uncomfortable with the decision making it myself, but I'll never have to make it. So talk is cheap for us guys. If we're going to make this a national issue, let nobody but women vote on it. Tony, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894 telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids. We've got a couple minutes here left. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Hi, Tom. By the way, you're dead on. Where I live in the Grand Rapids area, I can get a Milwaukee station, and they had a conservative talk host on this one. And you talk about frothing at the mouth about this situation with those weapons. It was just unbelievable. But that's not the real reason why I call. Tom, maybe you discussed this yesterday in your program, and quite frankly, because of my work, I could not listen and hear this. I was completely dumbfounded when I saw a tape of that debate that you had, that you participated in last Friday at the Heritage Foundation. I could not believe the ferocity of these conservative talk show hosts, particularly the guy from New York, Momberg, I forget the one fellow that had unusual first name.
Schmoly.
Yeah. I could not believe these guys. You talk about guys spewing venom out of their mouths. It just amazed me. Could you feel that on the dais where you were?
Well, you know, I don't. Yes, in short form. But I don't take it personally. I think of it all as theater, and I think a lot of those guys think of it as theater as well.
Okay.
I mean, I'm there to make my point, and I make my point the way that I think is the best made.
Sure.
And there has to be a certain level of entertainment or competence at communication, let's say, in order to make it. They just seem to think, and it seems to work on the right, the yelling, screaming, pounding your fist, shouting at people, you know, the way George Bush did in the second debate,
exactly.
that appeals to a certain type of mentality. And perhaps it does. I mean, you know, it worked for Hitler. It seems to be working for Bush with his base. That's what these guys do. And so, I didn't take it personally. Thanks for watching, though, Rick. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then, if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to wear.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Since George Bush took office, an additional 5 million Americans are uninsured, and a new report by Physicians for a National Health Program reveals that the number of uninsured veterans is increasing. Steffi Woolhandler is an associate professor at Harvard Medical School. She looked at the national census data and found a shocking number of veterans and their families are not medically protected.
We found that 1.7 million American veterans have neither health insurance nor ongoing access to VA hospital care. In addition, we found 3.9 million family members of veterans who had no health insurance. Added together, that's 5.6 million American veterans and family members with no health insurance. It's one out of every eight uninsured people in the United States.
As founder of the group Physicians for a National Healthcare Program, Woolhandler says Bush administration policies have hurt veterans. Prior to January 2003, all veterans were eligible for care at VA hospitals.
The Bush administration enacted a new policy that cut out middle-income veterans and only allowed people to get VA care if their income was below an income cutoff, which is about $25,000.
David Gelvin, veteran of the U.S. Navy.
I do believe that the vets have been let down. I don't have a service-related illness, and I was advised by the VA in Indianapolis that if I didn't have a service-related illness or disability, that I wasn't going to be accepted. So I went ahead and applied and was really never heard back from them and was told that it's pretty much a no deal. If if I get carted in an emergency, it might be a different situation, but as long as I was healthy, it didn't look like I was going to get any help at all.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What a friend we have in W. Upright, strong, and resolute.
See, this is what happens. People go visit that bushislord.com website, and they end up writing these kind of songs. I think this is another one from Tom Zimmerman. Welcome back. Our interesting bumper music day, 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Jeff in Denver, Colorado, on the line. How's that swing state doing, Jeff?
Well, it's bizarre. I sent an email to you today. Denver Post did a I would say, scathing endorsement of Bush. They cut him down more than they
yeah,
did I, good about him.
I read that. I thought about putting part of it on the air, but it was one of those kind of long things,
yeah.
You know. But
well, so they got 700 emails from readers. 100% of the emails condemned the post for, they just said, this is bizarre. Why are you endorsing Bush?
Right.
You know, you basically cut him down and endorsed him, but it was 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty amazing. The editorial in the Denver Post said something like, you know, Bush led us into an unnecessary war. He lied to us about this. He did this. He screwed up the economy. He's messing with the environment. He's sold out to corporate interests. He's not working in the interests of our children. He's harmed our educational system. And by the way, we think that you should vote for him. We're endorsing him.
And it's very possible we may become a majority Democratic state. The races for Congress and so forth are looking very good for the Democrats right now and for the senator.
Do you think Tom Tancredo's in trouble?
It's hard to say. I mean, he's got his competitor's gotten endorsements from the Denver Post and such. She was a Republican who became a Democrat.
Interesting.
And so she's a rather conservative Democrat, and she's looking pretty good. Her ads are good and everything. So. It's real hard to say. I mean, what's happening, we're seeing all around the country, is there are sudden upsurges everywhere of the Democrats.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is, people are starting to wake up. Jeff, got to move along. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Big point.
Okay, quick.
Okay, if Rehnquist actually doesn't get back to work, we're going to have a 4-4 vote, an 8-person Supreme Court, and we could go to 4-4 if we go to something like we did in 2000.
Yeah. Oh, boy, that'll be entertaining. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Hold that thought. Okay. Deborah in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, Deborah, we got just a little less than a minute left here. What's up?
Well, you asked me to call and report on our event last night.
Oh, my goodness. Can you call back in the next hour if your report is going to take more than a few seconds?
Can you hold me over?
We got 7.5 minutes of news here, so if you don't mind, just calling back.
Okay.
If it's easy for you, I would appreciate it. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Because that was great. I want to find out what happened with that. Deborah, they were putting together that event there in Santa Fe, and she was going to fill us in on it. Well, the latest Bush excuse on the weapons dump has evaporated. The cons on the radio, foaming at the mouth, in error. The mislead of the day. Turns out these soldiers did not notice that there were no weapons there. They didn't notice much of anything. They were simply on their way to Baghdad. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Truth in Broadcasting.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In the dark about the policies of John Kerry and feeling bullied by George W. Bush, Brazil is undecided which candidate would be better for relations between Latin America and the U.S. That's according to Maria Alves, a co-founder of the Brazilian Workers' Party and trade union activist. Alves spoke at the University of Wisconsin in Madison on Thursday and expressed how Brazilians feel about the U.S. elections and the future of the free trade area of the Americas. Brazil has refused to give in to U.S. demands on the agreement, believing that they would hurt the country's most important exports. According to Alves, when Bush visited Brazil last year, he went on live television and tried to bully Brazil into accepting the terms.
And so he, in Brazil, went on television and said, well, we're going to do bilateral agreements with every nation of Latin America and leave Brazil out if you don't negotiate with us the way we want. I mean, that's preposterous. The answer of the Brazilian president of the ALCA was, well, go ahead. I want to see you leave 180 million people out of a common market.
The attempt at intimidation left a bad taste in the mouth of many Brazilians. However, when it comes to Kerry, there is a big question mark. Alves says the only sign Kerry has given that he will listen to Latin American concerns is in a recent statement he made on Cuba.
He said that whatever policy he would have for Cuba would be discussed with Latin American leaders. That was very interesting, because that's the first time that an American candidate says that he will take into consideration the opinion of other Latin American leaders.
On Sunday, San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom called on hotel managers to end the lockout of 4,500 union workers at 14 San Francisco hotels. Manuel Castro, member of Unite Here, Local 2.
We're striking because they want to cut our benefits, they want to cut our wages.
In addition to San Francisco, contracts have expired in Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles, and workers want to bring their contract in line with other major hotel markets for simultaneous negotiations 18 months from now. The hotels have decided to play hardball by turning what was originally a two-week strike into an indefinite lockout. The union says it has the financial resources to weather a long battle. The British Broadcasting Service will cut 6,000 jobs, nearly a quarter of its workforce, by the end of the year. The BBC has a royal charter from the British government which allows it to secure license fees from television owners, netting an income of $5.2 billion. The plan involves cutting production staff through privatization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new report by Public Citizen reveals the Bush administration blocked rules to secure chemical and nuclear plants threatening homeland security. Industry representatives have contributed almost $20 million for Republicans since 2000 and include 20 so-called Bush pioneers, individuals who've raised at least $100,000 for the Bush presidential campaign. They've also spent more than $200 million lobbying from 2002 through June 2004.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I had survived two previous rounds of layoffs, and then the third round got me. They wiped out my whole department. I was forced to stop paying credit card payments. I had to file bankruptcy. I had to be rushed to the hospital for an emergency appendectomy, for which I'm not insured. How can we be the only westernized country without national health care? I can't believe that this is the best we can do. There's got to be a better way. I'm voting for John Kerry.
Move On PAC is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Great news, shouts George W. on the campaign trail. 95,000 new jobs were created in September. This is proof, he exclaims, that his trickle-down economic policies are working. How rosy. How wrong. First, 95,000 new jobs is a pathetically weak number in an economy that boasts such enormous new wealth creation as ours. It takes nearly twice that merely to match the number of new workers coming into our nation's job market each month. Meanwhile, there's the growing job backlog, the millions of Americans who are either unemployed or underemployed, wanting full-time jobs but only able to get part-time or temporary work. How bad is Bush's job record? Herbert Hoover bad. George will be the first president since Hoover, way back in the Depression economy of 1932, to have produced a net loss of jobs on his watch. Wait, cries Bush, look at the September unemployment rate, only 5.4%. Another rosy number, but another deceit. The only reason it didn't go up is that 200,000 more Americans have become so discouraged in their job searches that they have given up looking for work in September. If you've quit looking for a job, the system no longer counts you as unemployed, even though, of course, you are. But there's another job statistic that George doesn't want you and me to focus on. Wages. The real issue is not the number of jobs, but the pay of those jobs. Wages determine whether ours will remain a middle-class country. And the news here is not good. Hourly wage gains under Bush have fallen beneath the rate of inflation, meaning America's middle class is falling down. Indeed, in September, there was a loss of another 18,000 well-paying manufacturing jobs, while low-paying service jobs were up by 100,000.
This is Jim Hightower saying it's the American dream that they're destroying.
If you have joint pain and you're concerned you may be taking too many over-the-counter pills, here's a simple way to find out. Just read the labels. This one says for the temporary relief of minor aches and pains. What else? Not to exceed 8 tablets in 24 hours. And right here it says, do not take this product for pain for more than 10 days unless directed by a doctor. It is small type, but it's there for a reason. If your pain lasts more than 10 days, talk to a doctor, because the risks are real. Ulcers, kidney problems, liver problems, and far worse. So no matter what medication you take for joint pain, over-the-counter or prescription, make sure you're taking it the right way. Read the labels. If your joint pain lasts more than 10 days, talk to your doctor. To find out more about Safe Arthritis Joint Pain Relief or to get your free information kit, visit safepainrelief.com. Know the risks. Get the facts. This message brought to you by Pfizer.
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Our mislead of the day from misleader.org. In Iraq, 380 tons of powerful explosives have been looted and may have fallen into the hands of insurgents. So I guess that's not news to you at the moment, but what you've been hearing from the cons is, oh, it was already gone when we got there, right? This is the spin that literally Karl Rove actually spoke on the record on this yesterday. Well, of course, this is the administration that has never taken blame for anything ever. And in an effort to deflect blame, administration officials are pushing the theory that, to quote Karl Rove, when U.S. forces reached the Al-Qaqa is Arabic for deep doo-doo. For this administration. Bad joke, I'm sorry. The Al-Qaqa military facility in early April 2003, the weapons cache was already gone. End quote. The problem is, turns out that the NBC reporter who had sort of seemed to kind of substantiate that has said, no, that wasn't the case, actually. And secondly, according to an Associated Press report, U.S. soldiers witnessed the Al-Qaqa in April 2003 and, quote, found. Now, this, by the way, this is a report from the Associated Press, April 5th of 2003. Okay, so this was a report at the time. At the time. April 5th, 2003, an article in the Associated Press titled, U.S. Troops Find Signs of Chemical Readiness. U.S. soldiers in Al-Qaqa found thousands of 5-centimeter by 12-centimeter boxes, each containing 3 vials of white powder. Officials who tested the powder said it was believed to be explosives. The end of that story. And now, yesterday, an official who monitors developments in Iraq confirmed that U.S.-led coalition forces. Let me see what the reference is on this thing. This is also the Associated Press. Yesterday, an official who monitors developments in Iraq confirmed that U.S.-led coalition troops had searched Al-Qaqa in the immediate aftermath of the March 2003 invasion and had confirmed that the explosives, which had been under IAEA seal since 1991, were intact. Therefore, according to the official, quote, the site was not secured by U.S. forces, end quote. It just makes sense that the explosives were there when the U.S. soldiers arrived because, as the Los Angeles Times noted, given the size of the missing cache, it would have been difficult to relocate undetected before the invasion when U.S. spy satellites were monitoring activity. And in fact, that's how they discovered that it was moved, was the IAEA looking at these spy satellite pictures and saying, you know, there used to be something there, just like a week ago, it was the machines to make nuclear bombs. This week, it's the 380 tons of high explosives that can be used to detonate nuclear bombs. And of course, then you got the cons going, well, see, we told you there was weapons of mass destruction. No, this is not, we're not talking about a missile pointed at the United States. There are probably 80 countries in the world that have these kinds of weapons sitting around in these kind of quantities. We're not invading any of them. But the reality is that there are international controls on these kinds of weapons. They're strict. Most of the countries that have them comply with those controls. They use them to make military munitions. And that's what, you know, presumably what Iraq had them for. And it was under control. It had been under control since 1991. Now it's gone. And we probably won't find out where it is until it's used against us, God forbid. But that's the mess George Bush has put us into. Our quote for the day from Aristotle, where there is no middle class, I shouldn't just say George Bush, because frankly I think he got suckered into this thing too by Chalabi and the neocons. I would rather say the guys who signed that letter for the Project for a New American Century in 1998 to Bill Clinton, insisting that he immediately invade Iraq, who were the suckers of Iran, in my opinion. That was Jeb Bush, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Donald Rumsfeld. They all signed that letter. That's, I think, probably where the blame should be laid, although George certainly went along with the thing. Our quote for the day from Aristotle, where there is no middle class and the poor greatly exceed in number, troubles arise, and the state soon comes to an end. Speaking of conservative economics, Deborah in Santa Fe yesterday called to tell us about a meeting that you were involved in putting it together, or you were just attending it last night?
Yeah, I was one of the organizers.
Tell us about that for the folks who weren't listening to the program yesterday. Just bring us up to speed real quickly.
In New Mexico, we have what's called the Department of Peace Initiative, where we're trying to get a state cabinet-level Office of Peace established. And we've been working for the last close to 2 years very closely with law enforcement, doing like dialogue circles with activists and police. And the upshot is we have a very cooperative relationship. We don't have free speech zones here. We don't have any of that.
You mean when the president and the vice president show up in New Mexico, they don't put
Herbert
up free speech zones?
You know, Bush Sr. came to the El Dorado Hotel about 8 months ago, and there wasn't anybody in riot gear. There were no free speech zones.
Oh, that's interesting.
And a reporter from Texas came up and said, "What's up with you and your police?" And we just said, "Well, we dialogue with our police. They know who we are, and we know who they are." And
yeah.
And so this event last night was...
And you have a Democratic governor. That might help.
No, it has nothing to do with the governor. It has to do with what we've done in a grassroots...
The kind of
way
relationship you've built.
To what?
The kind of relationship you've built
with the local
law enforcement. Okay.
So last night we had our Secretary of State, and we had two members from the FBI, and we had people from Homeland Security and State Police and the sheriff and the police chief, and you know, we were kind of pretty much all on the same page. If something untoward happens, as you know, we understand what we need to do and where we stand, and that it's really about the locals asking for federal interference.
Yeah.
The feds can't come in just to interfere just because they want
now,
to.
Now, the scenario that you were talking about was presumably not so much the scenario of what if Al-Qaeda blows up Albuquerque or something, but, you know, the one...
Well, we dealt with all of that, Tom. We dealt with, you know, an attack on LAML, you know, the labs up here.
Sure.
There's a BSL-3 and a nuclear lab.
But wasn't the biggest concern what happens if Bush takes the presidency in a contested election and there's a broad consensus that he actually didn't get it and there's a revolt?
Well, the revolt part was certainly what we were looking at.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the revolt is controlled and by ourselves, you know, that we don't go smashing windows and everything,
right,
then there's no reason to bring in federal anything.
So what came out of the meeting? Was it just a good conversation, or were any decisions
made? Well, it was
or?
A panel, you know, and a lot of information, you know, what kinds of things are in place with health crises, you know, flu vaccines, vote counting, you know, voting machines that don't work. And
right. Did FEMA come up?
Yeah, FEMA. Well, it was the New Mexico Emergency Management, not the federal.
Yeah.
But, of course, they're the ones who interface with the federal.
Because there's this huge conspiracy theory that FEMA is operating empty concentration camps all over the
right.
United States just waiting to take us away, you know.
Uh-huh,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, I'm wondering if that got brought up.
Here's the deal, Tom. If people who are on the progressive side of the spectrum demonize law enforcement instead of talking with them, then you will get that.
Yeah.
That's our point.
I agree. I remember back in the late 1960s, I was going to school in East Lansing, and we had and of course the big competition was between Michigan State and University of Michigan,
mm-hmm.
In college football. But we had the Pigs versus Freaks football game every year. And it was the hippies versus the cops. And you know, I never played in one. I'm a lousy football player. But I attended a couple of them, and it was great fun. And it was this incredible community building thing.
Yeah.
It was just remarkable. I mean, it must have gone on for 3 or 4 years at least. I'd say from 68 to 72.
Here's the message, Tom. The feds don't get involved in your community unless the mayor tells them to.
Uh-huh.
And the mayor doesn't do it unless the police chief and the sheriff tell them to. So if you're worried about, you know, civil unrest, I recommend very, you know, strongly getting to know the people in your neighborhood on a first-name basis, and they're not likely to call in the feds.
Right. So participate with them.
That's
Deborah, great. Thank you very much for the report. I appreciate your calling us back and your tenacity and hanging out over the news and calling us back. Thank you so much, Deborah.
Okay, Tom.
Great to hear from you. Keep up the great work.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye now. 1-866-889-8894. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I kind of wanted to update and talk about the 380 tons of missing explosives. You realize that's over 9 tractor-trailer loads of missing explosives?
I heard it was more like 40. 40 tractor-trailer loads.
Now, let's see, you can put 20 tons to a truck. So
well, are you sure? I mean, if you're just talking about weight, then that's one thing. But this stuff is not that heavy. It's you know, you got to consider density. I saw pictures of people moving this stuff around last night on the news, and guys were picking up boxes of it that were the size of your basic case, you know, your basic carton or something.
Right.
And from the way they were carrying it, it looked like maybe it weighed 30, 40 pounds. If that was steel, that would have weighed 600-700 pounds. So,
right.
So you know, density is a big thing.
That wasn't really what I mean. It was a big mass of stuff.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, my nephew serves. He's a sniper. He serves on a special weapons platoon. And one of their major missions, they get dropped to these various ammo dumps.
In Iraq.
In Iraq, quite frequently. I mean, his squad himself, 3 to 4 days a week, they get dropped, and it's basically in a hostile zone. And when I thought of an ammo dump, I was thinking, I don't know, a city lot, you know, maybe a big box store. These things are as large as 3 to 4 kilometers square.
Yeah, these are like a small city.
And these guys are out there. They have they have lousy night vision equipment. They know there's another squad out there 800-900,000 meters, but they can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they see movement, and they're out there for 2 to 3 days at a time, absolutely immobile.
Yeah.
Waiting for the bad guys to come to steal this stuff.
Yeah.
That's how strong and how thick the munitions are in Iraq.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one of the talking points on the Republican side right now is we have secured hundreds of thousands of pounds of this stuff. We are destroying hundreds of thousands of pounds of this stuff, and they're right. They're right, and
yeah.
You know, and God bless them for doing it.
God bless them.
You know, it's a wonderful thing, but sorry, it's not enough, guys.
It's kind of like saying, well, we put out, you know, there was 100 apartment complex, and we put out the fire in 40 of them.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
So anyway, I just
doesn't
wanted to pass that along because my nephew is out there, poorly equipped, in danger. There's friendly fire accidents all the time.
Yeah.
Guarding these ammunition dumps.
Well.
So.
Well, I'll say a prayer for Roy's nephew there. Roy, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Bye.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Talk radio for the rest of us.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Tonight, the biggest thing on television continues on NBC.
The Biggest Loser.
We are all working out so hard.
Last week, these amazing contestants lost a total of 143 pounds.
Everything hurts.
My heart's at home, but I know I gotta do this for them.
But this week...
That was cruel.
The hunger is getting to them.
I'm gonna die!
The Biggest Loser, followed by Father of the Bride, Scrubs, and Law & Order SVU. All new NBC Tonight.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And so they're spending $985 million to persuade seven people in Ohio.
It's ironic. So isn't it amazing?
Transsexual.
It's incredible.
Move to Cincinnati.
I'm not sure where that song is going, so we'll just end it there. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. More than 230 leading scientists. Let me get to this in just a second. This is first. I want to share with you very quickly bit of revisionist history, as they say. What is revisionist history? Probably the expert on it, the world expert on revisionist history, would like to speak on that.
There are some who would like to rewrite history. Revisionist historians is what I like to call them.
No one ever said that we knew precisely where all of these agents were.
We know where they are. They're in the area around Tikrit and Baghdad.
Those who say we haven't found the banned manufacturing devices or banned weapons, they're wrong. We found them.
Iraq did not have the weapons that our intelligence believed were there.
This looks like a rerun of a bad movie, and I'm not interested in watching it.
What would your...
Yeah, so we'll stop it there. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program today. Let's see, our line, Ron in Clemson, South Carolina is on the phone. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Tom, yesterday you were gave a quote about some general or someone who said how easy it was to lead people into war.
Yeah, that was Hermann Göring, and he said that to his psychiatrist when he was being interrogated during the Nuremberg war crime trials. And his psychiatrist wrote it in a book about the war crime trials that's fairly well known. You can find it easily all over the Internet.
Okay. You know the name of the book?
You know, I don't, but
okay.
You could find it with a Google search. Let me see if I've got the, I think I might have shuffled that page. Oh, here it is right here. Here's the quote again. It's from Hermann Göring. That's really all you need to know. It's, when it's anglicized, it's spelled G-O-R-I-N-G, but it's the O with the umlaut, the two dots over it, so it's actually pronounced so it's Hermann Göring. And he said, and I quote, "Of course the people don't want war. But after all, it's the leaders of the country who determine the policy. And it's always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it's a democracy, a fascist dictatorship, a parliament, or a communist dictatorship. Voice or non-voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them that they are being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and for exposing the country to great danger." That's the quote.
Okay.
Hermann
Göring. Sounds familiar.
Yeah, yeah. The tactic certainly sounds familiar, yeah.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Exactly.
Unfortunately.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call, Ron. Good to hear from you. Yeah, the official message of the Bush administration, be afraid, be very, 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 very afraid. In fact, be even maybe a little more afraid than that. So more than 230 leading scientists and economists from across the nation, our Bush Green Watch alert for the day, have asked the United States Forest Service to abandon its efforts to weaken the Clinton-era roadless area conservation rule, saying that proposed changes run counter to sound scientific and economic principles. 230 leading scientists saying, you guys are messing with our forests in ways that are going to ruin them. In a strongly worded letter to Forest Service officials, the scientists, including world-renowned chimpanzee expert Jane Goodall, who spent more than her share of time in the forest, I can tell you, and Harvard biologist Edward O. Wilson, E.O. Wilson, probably the most famous biologist on Earth, warned that they are, quote, especially troubled by the current Forest Service leadership's track of ignoring the best available science in policy decisions affecting public land. In a separate letter, end quote, in a separate letter on the economic pitfalls of building more roads in national forests, the economists, including Nobel laureate Kenneth Arrow, say that the timber industry, which already receives tens of millions of dollars of taxpayer subsidies to build roads for logging projects, would further burden the federal budget deficit. You see, a large part of what this timber, you know, healthy forest initiative is all about is corporate welfare. The welfare queens are alive and well in the lumber companies, in the oil companies, in the chemical companies. They're all over the place.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
In the dark about the policies of John Kerry and feeling bullied by George W. Bush, Brazil is undecided which candidate would be better for relations between Latin America and the U.S. That's according to Maria Alves, a co-founder of the Brazilian Workers' Party and trade union activist. Alves spoke at the University of Wisconsin in Madison on Thursday and expressed how Brazilians feel about the U.S. elections and the future of the free trade area of the Americas. Brazil has refused to give in to U.S. demands on the agreement, believing that they would hurt the country's most important exports. According to Alves, when Bush visited Brazil last year, he went on live television and tried to bully Brazil into accepting the terms.
And so he, in Brazil, went on television and said, well, we're going to do bilateral agreements with every nation of Latin America and leave Brazil out if you don't negotiate with us the way we want. I mean, that's preposterous. The answer of the Brazilian president of the ALCA was, well, go ahead. I want to see you leave 180 million people out of a common market.
The attempt at intimidation left a bad taste in the mouth of many Brazilians. However, when it comes to Kerry, there is a big question mark. Alves says the only sign Kerry has given that he will listen to Latin American concerns is in a recent statement he made on Cuba.
He said that whatever policy he would have for Cuba would be discussed with Latin American leaders. That was very interesting, because that's the first time that an American candidate says that he will take into consideration the opinion of other Latin American leaders.
On Sunday, San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom called on hotel managers to end the lockout of 4,500 union workers at 14 San Francisco hotels. Manuel Castro, member of Unite Here, Local 2.
We're striking because they want to cut our benefits, they want to cut our wages.
In addition to San Francisco, contracts have expired in Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles, and workers want to bring their contract in line with other major hotel markets for simultaneous negotiations 18 months from now. The hotels have decided to play hardball by turning what was originally a two-week strike into an indefinite lockout. The union says it has the financial resources to weather a long battle. The British Broadcasting Service will cut 6,000 jobs, nearly a quarter of its workforce, by the end of the year. The BBC has a royal charter from the British government which allows it to secure license fees from television owners, netting an income of $5.2 billion. The plan involves cutting production staff through privatization.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new report by Public Citizen reveals the Bush administration blocked rules to secure chemical and nuclear plants threatening homeland security. Industry representatives have contributed almost $20 million for Republicans since 2000 and include 20 so-called Bush pioneers, individuals who've raised at least $100,000 for the Bush presidential campaign. They've also spent more than $200 million lobbying from 2002 through June 2004.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
What do you call a tax cut for the wealthiest 1%?
Homeland Security.
What do you call the other 99 who can't make the rent?
Homeland Security.
A lovely little bit of phraseology for all the neocon men when they announce a massive deficit. Something that they can say to preface it. What do you call the cable guy who's rifling through your mail?
Homeland Security.
I love it. Tom Zimmerman's music there. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program, 27 minutes before the hour. I want to talk about this Wolfpack ad, because this is one of the remarkably most misleading pieces of advertising that I've seen in this campaign. And the Bush campaign put this thing together 4 or 5 months ago. They focus group test all this stuff, and they found that this one had the greatest impact. And frankly, I think the impact is not because of the wolves, but because of the lie in it. The lie in it. That's right. The voiceover on this thing says, after the first terrorist attack on America, John Kerry voted to slash America's intelligence operations so deep they would have weakened America's defenses. Okay. Now, it makes you think that after 9/11, John Kerry voted to cut intelligence. Because it says after the first terrorist attack on America. Not true. This was after the 1994 truck bomb in the parking garage underneath the World Trade Center went off. And that year, there was an attempt by the Republicans in Congress to balance the budget. It included a provision that would have cut the intelligence budget by $5 billion over 4 years. That's a 3.7% reduction in the intelligence budget over a five-year period. Porter Goss, who was just confirmed as the head of the CIA, was pushing for a 20% cut over 5 years. John Kerry voted for the more modest 3.7% cut. So, and this after the truck bomb went off in the parking lot. But this ad implies that he voted to cut intelligence after 9/11, and that it was a cut to the bone, and it's a lie. It's a tragic lie, I think, that Americans would be so manipulated using fear, and that it would require a lie to do it. Is in my opinion tragic. It's criminal and tragic. 1-866, our telephone number, one of those newfangled toll free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. Santa Fe Spitfire in Santa Fe.
Hi.
Hi. You are live. What's up?
Well, first of all, I tried to get things going in the chat room, and I don't know what I'm doing. And I posted some of this information in the forum, but it has to do with the very thing you brought up at the top of the show, people going for early voting in Albuquerque and things coming up wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I started collecting this information and even emails from friends. And I've turned the information over to People for the American Way, which is a nonpartisan group. It's going to be poll monitoring and has attorneys available and advocates that can actually be invited in by voters when they're having a difficult time.
Although let us be candid with our listeners, People for the American Way is generally regarded as a ACLU type civil liberties, left leaning, perceived by the right wingers anyway, organization.
I recognize that, but the work they're going to be doing is nonpartisan. If a Republican comes to the table and says, you know, the wrong thing's coming up, will you come in and help me vote?
Yeah.
They will go in and, you know, they are ethically and morally bound to help them vote.
I agree with you. And I just wanted to make that point in the event that, you know,
possible that group will be able to be closer to the polls, actually, than the partisan groups that will also have their lawyers and advocates.
So the bottom line here, Spitfire, is what?
Well, I decided to call the Secretary of State.
Uh-huh.
I quickly got passed along to the head of elections for the state of New Mexico,
mm-hmm.
who quickly passed me along to the man that is in charge of verifying that all the machines work correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And I played stupid, which got the best information from him. And I was reassured that all the machines work fine, and everything has to do with human error. People pressing too hard. People leaning their palm on the machines.
Yeah.
And when I asked him, why on earth then would a reporter write something like these articles?
Right.
And I read to him right from the articles.
Right.
He said because they're fishing for good stories.
Yeah. Well, see, this raises an even larger issue. If the voting machines are not rigged and they're not defective, but your vote is so easily screwed up by leaning in the wrong place, is this a technology that we want using?
I said to him. I said, you know, I'm hearing what you say. I understand, you know, people may not be doing it right, but aren't the machines then inherently flawed in their design if bright, intelligent people, including the president of a city council, can't get it right?
And he said...
And he said, he got pissed, and I disagree.
Yeah.
you know, people just... They
that was the end of that, right?
And none of these complaints have made it to me, so none of this is founded, and I just said, well, I guess what I'm looking for is some comfort, and all I have to go on is your word. And I said, I guess I'm going to have to live with that and reassure people that they need to get someone to help them vote.
Yeah.
If they have, if they're inclined to even ask for help.
Yeah.
Because it's set up to make you feel like a stupid person.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate. Right. Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that that's the kind of answer you're getting. But I have a feeling that this is just the tip of an iceberg.
Oh, well,
of the iceberg. You know, it's going to, and this is going to be one of the most, on both sides. I mean, you've got all these cons out there now, all the conservative talk shows talking about the Democratic attempts at voter fraud, right? I mean, that's the new talking point.
Well, I have yet to see anything in the news about that. And the fact that the papers are reporting something, and it's primarily the errors come up for Democrats.
Yeah, you mean against Democrats.
Whatever button you push,
it records as a vote for George Bush, yeah.
Exactly.
And, yeah, although...
And, you know, people trying 5-6 times...
Yeah.
And
but I'll tell you, Spitfire, I'm getting I get the talking points from the right wing side that they send out to right wing talk show hosts, and they are encouraging right wing talk show hosts to be making a big noise about. And if you start listening to some of the right wing talk shows, you'll find that they're falling into line to start making a big noise about efforts by Democrats to fraudulently mess with the election, whether it's through voting machines, whether it's through mostly through registering phony people, and which is particularly ironic because most of the Donald Duck registration that we've had in these states where they find 1,000 ballots with phony names, made up addresses.
Yeah.
They were all the Nader ones, and they were this isn't to blame Ralph Nader. It was because the Republicans went out and they hired people and said, "We'll pay you $1 a name if you bring in names." And so the people just started making up names, got their dollar and got their $1,000 for 1,000 names, and walked away happily. And the Republicans, because. It's biting their own thing is coming back to bite them, but that's where most of the fraud is coming from in the registration. But the talking points for the Republicans right now are to tell the talk show host, start talking about Democrats trying to engage in vote fraud, and I think it is because there is this what some would say systemic voter fraud going on, or at least the potential for it on the Republican side. The larger issue, and thanks for the call, Spitfire. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. The larger issue, I think, here, frankly, and it's really important to always try and take these things up to the largest issue. This is the real issue. The real issue is, of all the things that are part of our commons that we entrust to ourselves, that we put in our own hands via our elected representative government, that we the people do for ourselves, we the people have decided we want to entrust ourselves with our own protection. So we put together our own police departments, and we pay for it out of our tax dollars, part of the commons. We want to protect. We want our own fire department and that protection. And so of all the commons... Of all the commons, in my opinion, the most important and valuable is the vote. As Thomas Paine said, take away a man's vote and you reduce him to tyranny. Or you reduce him by tyranny. Or I must have the quote wrong because that doesn't quite make sense. But you get the point. Thomas Paine was rather outspoken about this, as were many of the founders. And just very, very clear. And why, then? Have we put our votes in the hands of private for-profit corporations that will not allow us to see the guts of their machine and that will not give us a paper trail? If somebody could explain that to me in a way that makes sense, I would sure appreciate it, because it seems to me that this is the worst of the crimes of privatization, the privatizing of our vote. Putting our vote, our democracy, the beating heart of our democracy, into the hands of a corporation like Diebold, which might be a wonderful corporation, but good old Wally, who's the CEO, writes a letter to everybody in Ohio saying, we are committed to making sure that Ohio goes for George Bush this year. And I believe that he simply meant us Republicans and, through legitimate means. I don't think he meant he was going to rig machines. But why? The advice... What was it, in Shakespeare, or was it Paul who talked about avoiding even the appearance of impropriety? I frankly don't remember. But why would we even allow the potential appearance of impropriety, much less the potential actuality of it? Why would we put our vote in the hands of private, for-profit corporations? This is wrong with a capital W. 1-866-889, yeah, big W. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Rob in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Rob is the editor of Op-Ed News on the line. Hey, Rob, what's in the news? What's up?
Hey, Tom. Well, you know about in terms of the election, the voting, there were bills in both the House of Representatives and the Senate put out by Democrats. The Republicans didn't back them. There was plenty of time.
Yeah, Rush Holt's bill, for example, it would have required a valid paper trail, a ballot being printed by these machines. Yeah.
So the answer is the Republicans.
Yeah, I know.
Now, the reason I called is there's an interesting quote in the New York Times today of our President Bush here, where he's bashing Kerry for not living up to the defense principles of the Democrats. And he says, Senator Kerry has turned his back on, quote, pay any price and bear any burden.
I know. I saw the clip last night on the news. He was quoting Roosevelt and Kennedy and saying that Kerry was turning his back on. I mean, it was a despicable and cowardly attack on the part of George W. Bush.
But the funny thing is, Bush has embraced that. Pay any price and bear any burden. He's talking about drug prices. He's talking about health care. Pay any price and bear any burden. He's talking about the cost of gasoline, not about protecting this country.
Yeah, well,
talking about screwing the middle class.
Yeah. I get the irony, Rob, but I'm still saddened. Frankly, I'm just saddened by the level to which political rhetoric and discourse has dropped in this campaign, particularly, and I want to just say this again, I am not a Democrat, particularly what's coming out of Karl Rove's machine, out of the Bush-Cheney campaign. It's bizarre. And what's so horrifying to me is that folks in the media, and I don't mean to include you, because I know in Op-Ed News you've been fairly balanced about this, opednews.com, but folks in the media are so working so hard to try and, if they say anything bad about one guy, they've got to say something bad about the other guy. And so they'll take some just outright lie that the Bush tells, and they'll say, but Kerry has a deception too, and they'll take some exaggeration. And, you know, and Kerry has had his share of them, absolutely, of exaggerations. But Bush has been just laying down these lies, and Cheney laying down these lies and in their ads that are just, it's not good for democracy. It's just for democracy.
I've been knocking on doors every week for the last over a month, doing canvassing because, you know, I live in Bucks County, which is like the center of the cyclone for Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
We've had probably a good 100 busloads of out-of-staters come in from New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Washington, Maryland, all knocking on doors here in Bucks County because Bucks County is just about the most important county in the state in order to swing the state.
I know, and it might be one of the most important states in the country. By the way, did that filmmaker call you this morning? I gave him your number. There's a documentary maker who's going to be calling you. Anyhow, finish your sentence. We got to move along.
My point is, when I knock on doors and I talk to people who are supporting Bush,
yeah,
there aren't any lights in their eyes. They're angry, but it's like they're hypnotized.
Yeah, yeah. It's
like they're listening to this nonsense, just like these stats are coming out.
It's baseball. It's baseball, Rob. People are going to be Yankees fans or Orioles fans or whatever, you know, forever. And it's my team, right or wrong. And there's a lot of people in politics, for better or for worse, who are, it's my team, right or wrong. And George Bush happens to be on their team.
We now know that 75% of these people don't know the truth. They
yeah.
So brainwashed.
I know. They're watching faux news. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot for the call, Rob. Good to hear from you. Ed in California on the line. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind? Whoops.
This is Bush who wants to privatize Social Security. Right?
Ed, I ran up against the break there and I had you potted down. Let me hold you over. We'll take you on the other side of this call. Hang on just a minute. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 10 minutes before the hour. Catching up with the clock here. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle, helping you win the water cooler wars. And hopefully win back our nation on November 2nd.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Oric name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Oric XL uses triple-walled, disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Oric bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum, and the dust goes right back into the room you've just cleaned. Is this sanitary? Oric cleans the air as it vacuums the floor. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. It's the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
Acid rain has fallen from the headlines, but an ecologist says we're a long way from solving the problem. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. In 1963, Gene Likens found that samples of rainwater he collected in the White Mountains of New Hampshire were very acidic. 9 years later, Likens, now director of the Institute of Ecosystem Studies in New York, published the first paper on acid rain. The issue became a leading environmental cause, and the 1990 amendments to the Federal Clean Air Act reduced emissions of sulfur dioxide, the main pollutant in acid rain. But Likens says rain is still up to 10 times more acidic than it should be in parts of the Northeast. And he says soil minerals like calcium and magnesium, which can neutralize acid, have been used up.
Having leached out large amounts of calcium and magnesium have made these soils now even more sensitive to continuing inputs of acid rain than they were before. It's sort of like using Tums or Rolaids for an acid stomach. And when the Tom and Rolaid is used up, then your stomach may burn.
Likens says the main source of the acid is changing. Coal-fired power plants emit most of the sulfur, but cars and trucks are putting more nitrogen oxides into the air.
The 1990 amendments to the Clean Air Act focused almost entirely on reducing sulfur emissions to the atmosphere. Well, that's good. That's great. But we also have increasing amounts of nitrogen oxides emitted to the atmosphere. And I predict from my work that by about 2012, that nitric acid is going to be the dominant acid in precipitation, where it has been for at least 50 years, sulfuric acid.
Lichen says those higher inputs of nitrogen could present yet another set of problems for ecosystems already harmed by acid rain. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What if a guy came up to you and said, I'm going to bring forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal? You'd probably say, right on, good luck with that. And what if he said, I'm going to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity? You'd probably say, wow, knock yourself out. And what if he said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country? You'd probably say, I got a meeting.
Yeah, welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Ed in California. You started to make a point there, and we ran up against the proverbial time barrier. What's up, Ed?
Yeah, well, you were talking about privatizing the voting.
Yes.
Well, there's another privatizing, a Social Security.
That's
that
right.
Wants to go on.
Yep.
I live in California. Whenever they privatize anything, they screw you over.
Sure. But the lights dim up.
I think I can find a job for Ken Lay. He can be in charge of Social Security.
Yeah.
That'll ensure us that we got it. I mean, we're privatized. Halliburton sells us the tents, rents us the tents for our soldiers.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Did you see where the Army now has given up? There's $1.6 billion in dispute with Halliburton that Halliburton can't quite account for.
Yeah,
and
sure.
The Army has given up. They just announced yesterday that they're going to reach a settlement because they've given up on any hope that they can actually track down where all this money went, and they're to try to avoid further bad publicity. They're going clearly for the administration. They're going to just settle. They're going to settle with them. There's going to be some kind of fine, and Halliburton will pay it. And you know, once again, and that'll just be the end of that.
We would have impeached Clinton.
Oh, this is, you know, if can you imagine if Al Gore had been taking money from a defense contractor when he was vice president?
Goodness, that stinking Al Gore.
Yeah.
Good.
He wouldn't have survived.
He's not a good man.
That's what they would have you believe, Ed.
Ed,
thanks for the call.
Good to hear from you.
You too. Armin in Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, last thoughts for the day. What's on your mind?
I predict if this criminal electric media installs this rogue cheerleader for another 4 years, I predict that eventually, and maybe sooner than later, they will be held accountable for complicity in war profiteering, racketeering, international court.
Okay, good prediction. You know, I would say that the electronic media is just doing what we allow them to do. We set the rules of the game, and frankly, we need to change the rules rather than pick on the media. But that's just being part of the media, my take on it. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today. Thanks to Ira Gravatt for engineering it, to Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org, to the folks at Cable Radio Network for putting us on cable systems in 29 states, for our sponsors, of course, particularly Small Dog Electronics. Thanks to Jay for the music, the folks in our chat room, and to you. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace,
The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election.